I'd like to call the meeting, a special meeting to order of the Unalaska City Council at 6 p.m. on Monday, April 10th. I would like Councilman to read our mission statement. Bill. Sorry, Ben.
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Okay, thank you. May I have a roll call, please?
Certainly, sir. Councilmember Bell?
Here.
Councilmember Coleman?
Here.
Councilmember Luby?
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Here.
Councilmember Robinson?
Present.
And Councilmember Tungle?
Here.
Mayor Tudyakov?
Here. Thank you very much. We do have a quorum. Please join me and as I ask Councilman Robinson to lead us in Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Councilman Robinson. I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda, please.
Move to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, seconded by Councilman Tungle. Hearing no objection, the agenda is adopted. Next item is community input and announcements. At this time, for members of the public to provide information to the council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, and state your name.
Thank you. Hello, Mayor and Council, Roger Blakely, Director of Parks and Recreation. Have two announcements tonight. The first announcement is long in coming. It's been over a year since we've been under construction of the library, and we are planning the library grand opening Sunday, April 30th from 1 to 3. And you'll be receiving a invitation for that, but I wanted to let you know that we are committed to have that library open on Sunday, April 30th. So there's still a few things to do, and you're going to see a lot of activity over the next little while, but we are committed to make that happen. The next thing that I'd like to tell the community about is that we have our annual community cleanup. It will start on May 1st, and it'll go through the 15th. We hope all of you go out and clean up the beaches and the sides of the roads and all the things that the winter junk that's kind of around the community. Matson will also be our supporter this year and provide prizes, up to $2,500 worth of prizes. So we'd like to invite you to both of those events. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Roger. Does anyone else wish to speak in the chambers on Zoom or telephone?
There's nobody on Zoom, sir.
Okay, thank you. Next item is our public comment on agenda items. This time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda. If they don't want to wait until the item comes up for the regular agenda, to comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, state your name. Comments, okay. Does have any written comments or anyone on Zoom or phone wish to speak?
None, sir. None.
Okay, thank you. There is none. We'll move to the next item, which is our work session. May I have a motion and a second to go into a work session, please?
I make a motion to go into work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Nicholson, seconded by Councilman Robinson. Hearing no objection, we are in a work session. 6.05 p.m. I'll turn this over to the city manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Tonight, we're going to be hearing from the organizations that have applied for the Community Support Grant Program. We've invited representatives from each organization to come and give a brief 5-minute presentation basically about what it is they're anticipating to do with their programs this year. You have all the applications, the staff and myself reviewed the applications. We don't make recommendations. This is your program. We turn the basically the decision-making process over to you. If you have any questions about the process, any of the information that you've received, please feel free to direct those to me. Anything about programs, these folks will be here for you to inquire about your area of particular interest. So this year, the total funding amount available per our formula is $1,439,215. There were 8 organizations that applied. The total request for those funds is $1,501,714. So we're pretty close again. We were last year, we're about $62,000. So tonight we'll ask on the agenda, for those of you on the radio, there's an agenda and it has the list of organizations and the associated presenter. That's on page 2 of the agenda. Tonight we start in alphabetical order with APIA. Look at the presenters. Go ahead.
All right, this is the city clerk, and the mayor's asked me to call each organization up. The first organization, again, is Aleutian Purple Islands Association. And we have Stacy Kelly and Luke Stowe, and they have both joined us via Zoom. So Luke and Stacy, you can go ahead and begin your presentation.
Great, this is Stacy Kelly. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you just fine. Go ahead.
Wonderful. Hello, greetings. My name is Stacy. I'm with the Aleutian for Bluff Island Association. I'm the interim behavioral health director for the behavioral health department. We have submitted a proposal to offer behavioral health services for the community. The funding will be allocated to maintain adequate behavioral health staffing for the community. We aim to provide a healthy workforce to serve Unalaskans. This award would help support one full FTE for direct behavioral health services, including a master's level provider. The target population for this grant award is the community of Unalaska. Specifically, this grant will serve individuals experiencing substance use disorder or mental health disorder, family members, and the broader community through interventions and prevention efforts, supporting the health and wellness of one's individual through prevention and intervention efforts, in turn benefits the individual's family and supports the overall wellness of the community. So services at the Aleutian Pribilof Island Association are available to individuals throughout their lifespan. Through our proposal, we are aiming to offer well-rounded behavioral health services that align with the needs of the entire community. We want to enhance prevention and outreach efforts in topics that align with the community's request. So anti-bully, suicide prevention, and healthy lifestyle choices are among the few. And also network with community partners in Unalaska to prevent and decrease drug use in the community. We will, as part of our goals and objectives, retain a behavioral health staff in Unalaska and serve as a point of contact for Unalaskan for all their behavioral health services, which includes our access to our intensive outpatient program, recovery program. We'll also continue to host alcohol and drug information school classes quarterly as needed. And then as part of our prevention and outreach efforts, we'll coordinate with the school, tribe, USAVE, and other community partners to support educational opportunities for the community. And in addition, we will collaborate with community partners to host an annual health fair. Our third goal is to network with community partners. We will attend ongoing local community interagency meetings and maintain an open dialogue with local organizations and in partnership will host and co-host local events specific to topics identified by the community that are pressing needs. So our proposal this year, like I said, is we'll cover one behavioral health provider. Our funding is a decrease from last year of $5,000. There's some additional monies set aside for some supplies, office supplies and other supplies that the provider might need. But the travel was removed for this year's application. We will have matching funds through Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association to cover supervision, billing, administration support, you know, on-call building maintenance, and any costs related to the phone lease and internet. And I think I have Luke Stowe available too. If I missed anything, Luke, feel free to chime in.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Luke Stowe. I serve as the executive assistant in the department, and I have nothing to add. Thank you, Stacy.
Great. I had 15 seconds to spare, but I think I wrapped it up.
Do you have any questions from Council at this time? Councilman Robinson?
Not a question, but just a comment. I'm with the what I perceive as a problem with future revenues in the City of Unalaska. I'm glad you have a reduction in $10,000 in this year's as opposed to last year's. Thank you.
Councilman Coleman, then Councilman Tungle.
Yes, thank you. Good evening. You have $2,000 designated for food. What exactly is that? How's that used?
Oh, I suppose I could jump in on that. This is Luke Stowe. So one example would be for the health fair. We're holding a potluck. The health fair is coming up in Unalaska here, I believe, on the 21st and the 22nd. I think there'll be a potluck afterwards. And federal grants, we're not allowed to purchase food with. So we put some food buzzard in here so we could be able to share with the community and have a good time.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Councilman Tungle.
Hey, can you guys tell us what time is your operation? Like a weekly operation, but the time open and close?
Yeah, this is Stacy. We generally open from 8 in the morning till 4:30, but we do have ready access services and crisis lines for those who need after hours assistance. And the crisis line after hours is a 24/7 third party calling.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Tungle. Any further comments at this time from the council? Well, thank you very much. Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association for your request. We'll be contacting you at a later date. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and Council.
Thank you. I'll be muting Luke and Stacy now. Thank you. And next up is Ulaluk Family Health Services, and I believe Noel Ray, their CEO, is here.
I made copies, everybody. I didn't know we'd have an overhead. Mayor and Council, my name is Noel Ray. My first opportunity to speak to you since I've been here for the last 11 months or so. I don't think I need to introduce and go over exactly what the clinic does. It does a lot. And so I was focused on just what our ask is about, which is the after hours care, emergency room care. And there's a five page document that I printed off and handed to you. Next time I'll put it on the overhead. First, we just wanted to give a quick update on the CT that's coming on board. We've been hearing about it for a while, and it's hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. So just a couple bullet points. We're almost ready. We have a crew coming in on the, well, they should be arriving now, working on an interface for our doing reads for CT and within Epic. We've got our architect plans are done, our paperwork's filed with the city, we're waiting on that. Staff are busy training, but like a special recognition for our two, Erna and Chriselle, who are going out of their way and just taking on CT services on, in addition to what they're already doing. And it's a pretty amazing project that they're willing to start doing that service as well. We will have bids for construction for the connection. And I added on the next page just where it's going to sit. Maybe hard to read, but it's going to sit, unfortunately, right in front of the building because we don't have room in our current facility. So it's going to be in a trailer right in front. We'll have an attachment, break wind and rain and keep people relatively warm. But that's in process, waiting on a few approvals with different funders that we have, but we have the funds. It's just a matter of like hurry up and wait again. But the specific ask was for our ER services. Everybody knows we're essentially the ER for the region. And I don't think it's any surprise that it's generally a money loss, but I don't know that we've ever really sat down and shared with you kind of what the numbers are. And so that's what we've been trying to do is pull data out of our various systems to kind of give you at least an idea of what the difference is. So you'll see on there that we identified staff that would include all the staff that we carry extra in order to stay open 24/7 or be on call 24/7. So that's providers, that's nurses, paramedic, that's lab, imaging. So those are all additional people that we wouldn't necessarily carry on our payroll if we shut down at 5 or 6 or whatever. The equipment, that's just a 5-year equipment that would expire after 5 years. So we annualize that. So it's about 150, 160,000 over 5 years. Each year, it's about 36,000 for a total of almost $1 million. And then to be specific, we took our last year's revenue for ER services. And in the application, you'll see it actually line by line, every encounter, what we billed, what we recuperated from insurance, and then also from the patient. So that's in our, you don't want me to look at a 30-page spreadsheet. But in short, $106,000 out of insurance, $6,000 out of patient co-pays or other, for a total of $112,000 in revenue for the year for ER. So then on the last page, I made it real simple, that we run about an $870,000 deficit a year in terms of the clinics donating. With your support, it really drops it down significantly, down to 690 per year. So we don't really have any other sources of funding for emergency room care. I wish we did. If you hear of any, let us know. But we're doing our best to kind of expand services and do other things to help that loss so we don't have to shut down the ER. Nobody's wanting to do that. Anyway, that's it. I have an extra minute and a half.
Okay, thank you very much. Ask Council if there's any questions, comments. Councilman Tungo.
So your request is just for the emergency. It's just for the emergency support program.
Yes.
So you don't have anything that the numbers for the operation and the revenue for the clinic at all?
For the primary care side?
Yes.
We get an audited budget, and I think it was attached in our application. So you have all of that. But this is the specific program we're asking for and the revenue associated. So it was cleaner to give you this piece of it.
How is your billing going right now? Of course, it's been a problem from the previous years that people are not getting billed the right time, and then after a year or two, they get billed. So
right.
that kind of changed a lot now.
Yeah, in 2018, they went to an outsourced billing company, and that improved things a bit. But mostly when we switched EMRs to Epic, which is a much bigger, more sophisticated medical record, and so our bills drop out of that. We've hired two billers to do that work, and I think we're seeing positive returns on our end. I always hope that people will will call us if they have a question on their bill. We've tried to respond to anybody that's come to us. Every facility I've ever had always, it's billing, it's about the billing. Even in Anchorage and Prov and the big systems, you get a bill 4 months later, 6 months later. I don't have a great answer as to why these things take a while to kick out. But we do encourage anybody call. I'll give my mobile number and call me with any bill you got. I'll sit down and we'll work through it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you for, I'm thankful for that clinic and what it does. It'd be nice to have a little expansion here. I appreciate the fact that this remaining the same as what the request was for last year. As I said earlier, I think we're facing some uncertainty here with shorter seasons. We're not going to be seeing some of the sales tax that we normally see. Kind of worried. But I appreciate what you do. And I know I'm trying to make it work too. So be nice to have that emergency room.
Thank you. I'll pass it along to staff.
Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Councilman Robinson. Any further comments, questions for Mr. Reed? Well, thank you very much for the presentation. I appreciate the information.
All right, next up is the Museum of the Aleutians, and we have Virginia Hatfield.
Good evening, council members, Mr. Mayor. Virginia Hatfield, Executive Director of the Museum of the Aleutians. The Museum of the Aleutians is a nonprofit 501c3. Our mission is to collect, preserve, and share the rich cultural legacy of the Aleutian Islands region. We provide many unique services to the Unalaska community, which is all made possible by the support we receive from the city. These services include the community support grant helps fund our exhibition programs. We have a permanent and special collections gallery that showcases 9,000 years of Anunga lifeways and several of the historical events that have impacted this region and the peoples who live here. The changing gallery allows us to focus on more aspects of the Unalaska world out here. We currently have the 31st Community Arts Show hosted by the Aleutian Arts Council and is a really wonderful proof of the incredible talent that we have in our community. Another big part of our mission is our collections, central to our mission. We are a state-of-the-art curatorial facility, meaning we care for the objects professionally. We have archaeological objects, ethnographic pieces, historic items, photographs. Some of our photographs are now hosted on the Alaska Digital Archives. We accession hundreds of new objects each year as people make donations to the museum. We're currently seeing sizable donations as people return big archaeological collections from research in past years, like Lucy Johnson's collections, which just came in. And our collections are professionally accessioned and cataloged and kept in a secure, climate-controlled environment. Education programs allow us to reach a variety of audiences. We host field trips for the school, for Head Start, for the preschool. We just had the PCR 360 kids in. We had Ms. Worthy's seventh grade art class come in and study the art show. We also offer lectures in our gallery. You may have come in for the archaeology series that we had last summer. The Army Corps also had a talk on unexploded ordnance and how to recognize, retreat, and report. We support research. Many researchers come into our facility to access the ethnographic collections, the archaeological collections, and paper archives. Our past museum excavations revolutionized scientific understanding of the deep history of the Anunga peoples in this region and contributed to long-term ecosystem changes in the Bering Sea. Ongoing research includes some faunal remains, animal remains that just came back from Western Washington and Boston University. Which included some, they identified some bear bones, two different kinds of bears, in 4,000-year deposits at the Market Bay site. And then we do conduct archaeology each year ourselves. And this year we're working at the Bedachten site, formerly known as the Macnack Spit site. on behalf of the OC to learn more about what happened at that part of Unalaska. Tourism is another part of our mission, and the museum is a major destination for visitors to Unalaska. We work closely with the Unalaska Visitors Bureau on cruise ship visitors, ferry passengers, and then we host a variety of tour packages, guided gallery tours, collections tours, as well as hiking and driving and walking tours in our city. We are a major source of information for visitors to the island about this region and its history. A lot of times, you know, the impact we get is that people had never heard about what has happened out here. They don't know very little about the Anunga people, and they certainly don't know much about the war and what happened during that time to the Anunga people. So we are a unique service that we can provide this community that helps provide that information to our visitors. This year, we are asking for an increase that are primarily for salaries and benefits for our employees. As a small nonprofit museum, we're challenged to compete with the offerings that other industries can provide their employees. We have a really hard time with the benefits and the salary ranges that you see in the city. So we are hoping to be able to keep our excellent staff. We have a really wonderful staff right now that are all professionally trained and are doing an excellent job. And this increase includes cost of living increases that have been rather significant over the past couple of years. The community support grant is absolutely vital to the operation of the museum. There are not many grants that help with operations costs. Without your support, we would have to shut our doors. Thank you very much for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you very much. Any questions? Councilman Coleman?
Yes, thank you. So let's kind of just talk briefly then about what you're asking, the salaries, and more specifically the benefits. I'm just doing a quick comparison here. What's up here is like the benefits packets has changed dramatically, although from benefits for 3 full times to benefits for 4. Was your benefits last year subsidized by another means, or were we fit in
other means?
There mm-hmm. was okay.
Mm-hmm. So we put all of it on the city at this time, and then we also included the potential for having families included in the packages. And right now we don't have any family dependents being supported on by healthcare, but we want to be able to have that to offer. So that's a big, you know, that could be a big draw to be able to support a spouse and children.
And how much would that increase be if you went from a single to a benefit?
I don't have that right in front of you. As I recall right now on the plan that we have, and I know there's going to be an increase with the next fiscal year, I believe it's something, it jumps from like 900 to 1700 with the spouse. And I can't remember with the child. It might be another, I just can't remember. I'd have to guess. But 1700 for a couple.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you. I see the, you know, the city provides $373,000. Trying to break out where you have other revenues from, you have in-kind donation. I would assume that the land use and the rent is probably OC.
Mm-hmm. That's correct, for land.
I know the Aleut Corporation does, were they partners in this?
They are one of our founding members. We have 4 founding members for the museum, Aleut Corporation, Kawalangan Tribe, OC, and the city.
Okay, and what I'm wondering is outside of OC and the city, what kind of donations come in, and maybe is it possible to, or have you asked for an increase in those from those individuals?
We did ask for increases from OC and Aleut Corporation, and both in recent years have upped their amounts that they provide. They're both about 30,000,
35,000 a year. And you mentioned the Kawalingan Tribe also.
Yes. We get a lot of support in programming, no financial support from
right.
I think so, they have to compete.
They've got grants that are available to them that they should be able to help immensely with.
And they have reached out to me, and we are in conversation about options. So I hope that we can find something that works.
Right. So I love this museum, and I'd like to see it go on. But I guess, again, I'll repeat, I'm worried about our city revenues and where they may be taking us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further comments from council? I guess my comment would be to, we appreciate the fact that we have a history in this community and it's being curated by the museum. I, like Councilman Robinson, believe we have to utilize the grant program more or get somebody on board, the museum board or employee to get grants or work with the tribe. We're looking at a major project this summer, and we hope that complete it without having to shut down because of non-funding. So if you have answers to any of these questions, that further information, please submit them as soon as you can to the city clerk, and she'll get it to us.
Certainly.
All right, thank you.
All right, next up is the Kowalungan Tribe of Unalaska, and we have Anthesia video.
Ong Anglikina Anthesia Tidikas Saktuka. I am the Camp Kanayu director for the Kowalungan Tribe. Our submission here shows that we are asking for more funding, but you can also see within our budgets that we're also getting more funding from other resources. In order to not only expand, to have our annual camp on a yearly basis for 1 week, we are also expanding our services to weekly culture nights, where the community is also invited to this at no charge. We are also doing, we have a new funding resource, which is for victim services, which also is able to contribute to these other programs that we're doing. We're also providing support for the local dance group, which we have 25 people signed up for, and we're doing a regalia class next month. We are doing a plants healing with plants class in May as well. That's open to Alaska Natives for healing generational trauma. last year we had 82 culture nights for the community, free and no charge to anybody that comes. Creates a community of togetherness, wellness, prevention, and education about Wanunga culture camp this year, we're opening it up to the region. We're making sure that, that the other communities are being invited to participate. We're creating relationships with other organizations so that they can participate in these different programs that we have going on. Last year at camp, we had 22 different classes provided to 62 youth. And then I would also say that we also have at least 100 people participating in camp. So it's not just the youth, it's also the adults. You know, where there's a generational gap where we're not a part of, some people weren't a part of the culture camp. And now we have an opportunity to continue to expand that and offer those activities to our region. Last year, I know, having the funding that we need for these programs, is you suggested to us that we need to go after other funding, and we are. We are continually on an ongoing basis applying for grants, asking for funding from other sources, you know, asking for donations and, you know, hiring our local youth and asking for those people to participate, to donate their time as well, to cover some of the expenses that we have. Thankfully, we have a lot of generous people within the region and entities that are willing to participate in making that these programs grow. I think that covers it. That's all I got.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. Any questions or comments from the council? Councilman Robinson.
So I'm not going to ask any questions on this one. I am not going to participate on this as I am the president of the Cowlingen Tribe. And it's not that I have a direct benefit from it, but it's the perception. So as president of the Cowlingen Tribe, I won't be participating in this. And that, please have this broken out as a separate motion when the time comes to pass these grant or these applications. So thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for that information. Any further comments, Councilman Coleman?
Thank you. Actually, I have noticed increase in other sources of donations for this particular project. I know that has always been, the city has always pretty much been the sole source, a significant source of donations. So I did take note of that. However, we still run into the problem of the designation of a 501c3, which is what is a requirement of our grant application. For many years, it's been kind of overlooked, but it was brought up last year during the whole process. And I feel like it would not be prudent of me to ignore it. I think this council either needs to decide if we're going to stick with our application requirements designation as a 501c3, or if we overlook that, what then do we do when any nonprofit or any government aid, anybody comes over here who is tax exempt that wants to be a part of the grant program. So it's a comment, I think, is something that we really need to weigh in and consider. It does not mean to devalue the importance of the program, but I think we have to play a role here and decide as council, what are we going to decide as far as, you know, sticking with our process. So other than that, I don't have any other further comments. It will have to be considered. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Luby.
So going to the 501c3, have you guys tried to do that to get the 501c3 status?
We have tried several times, more than a few times, to, you know, make sure that we're able and eligible as a tribe to participate in this grant process. For the last 25 years, the city of Onalaska has been providing funding for camp and going towards developing a separate entity within a year. I don't think it's just not there yet. And until we're told that we're not eligible for this because of this, I don't think that we're able to separate Camp Kanayu from the tribe at this point.
Okay. Yeah, I know that at one point they were working on it, so I was just wondering if there was any more progress on it. Thank you.
Councilman Robinson.
Kind of a short answer to that is if right now the Cowlingen Tribe has a 100-year lease on Humpy Cove, And if we were to apply for a 501c3, it would cut us out of any federal grants available to have a building, a permanent structure built over there. So it's a difficult situation right now. So we would hate to forgo the federal monies that could be available in the hopes that we'd be able to get it through fundraising for 501c3. Mm-hmm. I know I wasn't going to comment on that, but I can answer that question. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, actually. It kind of clears the reason why you haven't moved forward on it. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Tungo.
Yeah, do you have any pending grant application or any other support program for this program?
Yes. So we included what we anticipate and what we're trying to get for Camp Kanayu this year. There are a couple of small grants, which is about 10%, 10 to 20% of the funding that we need that are still pending. Some of the grants that we are applying for are new, so we've never applied for those funding sources yet. And so we really don't know whether or not we're gonna get those or not. We're applying for Rural Cap, U.S. Fish and Wildlife currently, Siri Foundation. And, you know, these grants are not just for Camp Kanayu, it's for the other events that we have throughout the year. We have week-long events throughout the year that are the extension of a year-round culture camp.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Tungo. And further questions?
If I can just comment here real quick. I raised that issue last year only because as we go through our policies, it just states that it's supposed to be a 501c3 nonprofit. There was some confusion, I think, some folks. It's a governmental entity. So it doesn't pay taxes, but it's not a nonprofit. And I think just so that we're clear with our policies, it would merely take, you know, a director from council to make just so we're clear that the Q Tribe is eligible because you intend to fund some of these programs. I'm happy to make that change. I think that will solve the issues. It's not we don't want to fund them. It's never come across and been hit on as an audit issue. I think it's down far enough in terms of what they look at. I would just appreciate that we rectify our grant policies and include the Q Tribe.
Thanks, Bill. I think that the Q Tribe is aware of the situation. Hopefully they'll evaluate their programs and possibly split out the qualifications of a 501c3 into a separate branch and make it under that request under those programs. They have 22 programs out there that they're dealing with in this community. And not all of them are directly related to the whole community. A lot of them are tribal members only type grants. And what they do as a tribe, they go out and get funding that's benefits everyone in this community. And some of that is Camp Q. They don't distinguish, and I should know, I was a director for 5 or 6 years and voiced my objections to a lot of these questions, but sit on the other side of the fence, I have to say that hopefully the tribe will look at their programs and single them out and put them in a 501c program. It's not that we don't want to fund it. It's not that we don't like it. It's a great program that the tribe puts forth. And I don't know what else to say on it other than keep plowing ahead and do what you're doing. The tribe is a big part of this community. Thanks.
So question, are you saying that we need to change to a 501c3?
No, just look at it. I mean, there are programs.
Can you include as the council, as in your policies, to include the tribe so that we can apply for this funding?
We can do that, I believe, and Bill spoke to that.
We can't. You can.
We can.
You can. Okay.
Can. I get the NOT.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if you have further questions, I advise maybe you could talk with Bill and get direct answers that you need to take to your council and see what the council can do, your Coaland council can do to shape this in a way that we don't have to address this every year. It comes out crazy that, you know, we have this kind of a divide with a tribal entity that supports this community in a lot of different ways other than what you see financially. It does a lot of good things in this community. Thank you. Any further questions, you can direct them to Bill. Okay, thanks. And Fisher.
Okay, next up we have Unalaska Community Broadcasting, and Lauren Adams, their general manager, is here.
Yes, and I'm here with Matt, who's our longtime board chair. Back row there. Got questions? Send them to Matt. Yeah, we're a long-term nonprofit. I've been up here a lot of years, and I will keep it short. We have almost 40 years of history in the community, and we're excited to showcase that at the Museum of the Aleutians in 2024. Soon. We were originally a branch of the city. We were a part of the PCR department and became our own independent nonprofit after that. We provide news, information, and emergency messaging, and we do this over a variety of platforms right now: radio, television, web, social media, and we just continue to change the way we deliver our services in order to meet our community and our audience where they are. As we all know, that's shifting right now with increased access to internet. And so that's part of our goal in the coming years, to figure out where are people, how is this going to change this year? So, you know, we're always ready for that. Where am I? So we really try very hard to keep our bottom line, and especially what we ask for from the city, from increasing. The complete elimination of state funding in 2019 has been frustrating and challenging to recover from. Every year, it makes it through to the governor and gets line item vetoed. So at some point, maybe we will see state funding again. That would be great. In the meantime, we are doing our very best to get other grants. Ginny mentioned the challenge of finding operational funds for a nonprofit. We struggle with the same thing. However, we've had a couple good successes in past years. ProPublica funded a reporter. And then Report for America continues to pay for a portion of a reporter's salary. We were the only organization in the state of Alaska who got that grant again in the coming fiscal year. So we will have half of a reporter's salary coming out of Report for America in the coming year, which is a big help. I also have applications going to the Rasmussen Foundation and the Alaska Community Foundation, but these are for projects that won't help with salaries and fundraising income overhead, which is just amazing how much those costs have gone up in the past few years. Just buying premiums went from $8,000 to $12,000, or some crazy increase that just didn't make any sense in the past few years. So we're certainly feeling that. And so we did ask for an increase this year, and we kept it at 6%. And hopefully in the future, we will once again have state funding and not have to be coming this direction. We're also hoping for an increase in federal funds. And that takes a couple of years, but it is slowly happening. I believe that is everything I needed to cover off the top, but I'd love to answer questions.
Hey, thank you. Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you. I'm really disappointed that the state has quit funding public broadcasting, because so much of rural Alaska depends on that very connection to the outside. And we're lucky that we have you guys. Because a lot of communities don't, they had to drop those programs, so they're cut off from the outside. So I'm hoping that state funding will come back. It's probably going to have to be after this governor's termed out. But I again concerned for our revenues, and I appreciate the drives, you know, the fundraisers you guys do, you break records every year. And appreciate that. But we'll see what happens when we come to where the rubber hits the road.
Yeah, and I will say on the state, on the federal funding front, Dan Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski both have supported public media, and especially in for rural Alaska. So that's really helped with our federal funding piece. It's just that governor's sticking point. Yeah, and I imagine within the next couple of years, we will see a pretty significant increase from the federal government.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions from council? Councilman Luby.
So you mentioned with public media or, you know, internet, things like that. So with the internet coming, the fast internet coming, and everybody moving to probably streaming with Hulu and everything. Mm-hmm. So are you guys going to move digital so that?
Yes. In fact, we're meeting next week. That's on our agenda for the board to look at, is that first step of what do we want to have on Channel 8? And it's not really Channel 8, just TV anymore. So yes, I'm not sure what service we're going to use. We'll probably follow what the other public media stations have used. I just sent an email to Juno to ask what they're using. So they have their gavel to gavel service constantly streaming online.
Okay. Yeah. I was curious how that was going to affect you guys. And I'm sure that that's going to take additional funds and manpower too.
Yeah. And a lot about the additional funds, but the Rasmussen grant I'm applying for is to advance Channel 8 into the digital age.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Questions for, all right. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate what you do with the radio and TV. Thanks.
Next up, we have Un-Alaskans Against Sexual Abuse and Family Violence, better known as USAFE, and M. Lynn Crane and Karen Kresh. Good evening. I'm M. Lynn Crane. I'm the director of Un-Alaskans Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence, or USAFE. USAFE provides safety, education, and advocacy services to empower people and create a culture of nonviolence and respect. USAFE serves people impacted by domestic and or sexual violence, stalking, child or elder abuse, homelessness or near homelessness, food insecurity, and other life crises. In a community with limited social services, USAFE assists people dealing with all kinds of issues and needing all kinds of advocacy and support. USAFE helps people. That is what we do, and that is really all we do. We also strive to prevent interpersonal violence and suicide through outreach, education, and collaboration with our valued community partners. Unlike many other organizations, USAFE staffing costs are impossible to predict because we never know how many shelter nights we will need to provide in a given year. Could be hundreds or it could be very few. This is one of the reasons that we are sometimes able to give money. Our board, staff, and volunteers are proud of USAFE's demonstrated ability to respond to our beautifully diverse community's ever-changing needs and of our ongoing collaborative efforts to improve the health, safety, and quality of life of those living and working in Unalaska. USAFE has an established history of responsibly administering the funds granted to us by the City of Unalaska and of returning unexpended funds when we are able to do so. Thank you for your past and ongoing support of USAFE. And I know Karen wants to speak, and then I can answer questions.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm Karen Kresh, and tonight I'm speaking to you as Chair of the USAFE Board of Directors. I'm here to speak specifically about the increase that USAFE is requesting for providing insurance coverage for families of full-time staff. I would like the Council to know that this request comes 100% from the Board, after several years of board-initiated discussion about doing right by USAFE staff. I hear your concerns about revenues, and we acknowledge that too. We put a lot of thought into this request and have been talking about it for a long time, and we've incorporated it into USAFE's strategic plan. This change will bring USAFE into line with other local employers, including the City of Unalaska. And finally, this should go without saying, but I'll say it anyway, that USAFE's important work is only possible because of its excellent staff, and this proposed increase allows us to retain and recruit qualified and experienced staff, which benefits the entire community. As we stated in our application, USAFE will return any unspent portion of this requested increase that we don't use for our anticipated increased insurance costs. And finally, thank you for your continued support of USAFE and for the opportunity to speak with you tonight.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions, Councilman Coleman?
Thank you. So I'm going to preempt Councilman Robinson here. You know, I know he's going to say the same thing, but it is, I mean, the obvious thing is a significant increase, especially with the overall portfolio, especially among all of our nonprofits that are applying here. If you are not granted let's just say the amount that you're asking for this particular the increase of what was it, $90,000, would you change your program and still try to offer the insurance to the staff, or would you just drop the insurance altogether?
We're not offering staff to spouses or dependents at this time. That's what we would like to do. We based our requested increase on what we would need if every single staff member had spouse and children to provide for. Right now, that's not the case, but that could change tomorrow. I mean, my childbearing days are well behind me, but my staff, any of them could get married or have children or whatever at any time. So we budgeted to have 3 full-time staff needing health insurance for themselves and spouse and dependents. So it's unlikely that we would need all of that money or use all that money. That's why we made a specific point of saying we'll return what we don't use. If you don't give us the increase, I don't think our board would rewrite our policy to say they'll provide for staff, spouse, and dependents, because we don't know where that money would come from.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you. Actually, that's not what I was going to say. I just on the city's end of it, I see the increases in personnel costs and especially medical. It's crazy. It's off the charts. I appreciate what USAFE has done. They are the only organization that I know of since I've been on this council that has returned money that they didn't use at the end of a grant period.
I don't think we're the only one, but I think we have done it several times, largely because of years when we've had low shelter nights, or whenever we get other grants, depending on how much they are from Alaska Housing Finance Corp, or we get some federal money through API. We always try to use that money first so that we can return local money if it's available.
Right. And I trust that implicitly. And it is such a vital and important program for this community to have that facility available to be able to provide the services you do. And even though I'm really concerned about our revenues, I think this is one that we probably could bend that rule on, or I can, just because I know that if you're able to save money in an area, you will. And that's just your track record. So
can I just make a comment? I mean, I have had more than one staff member that worked another full-time job, one of them at the city, just so she could have insurance for her children. I mean, I don't have children, but I have a spousal unit. And if he was to get sick and have to leave his job, his insurance would go away. And because I can't provide it through USAFE. And so it's just very difficult for us to compete with the city when, you know, the whole health insurance thing, don't get me started. But, you know, it's an issue. It's a big issue. Yeah. And, you know, we want our employees I have excellent staff. I want all of them to stay. And, you know, we want to take care of our people.
So, yeah, that said, socialized medicine works in 32 of the 33 industrialized nations. Somehow, for some reason, it doesn't work here. Crazy.
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councilman Robinson. Councilman Bell.
Yeah, I just want to make a quick comment. I was going to reserve my comments on most of the applications until the end. But on this particular one, I'm kind of surprised every year that we don't see increases, considering that there hasn't been any major increases in requests over the last 4 years or so I've been on the council. And I have no issue with the increases. I completely understand, and I will support the amount that's requested here.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Any comment, question, Councilman Tungle?
Yeah, I agree. I think they're always good on returning whatever the unused funds that they received. So I fully support this. I think it's long overdue for them to make sure all the employees in there are covered, and we want to make sure we keep them too. So I appreciate it. And I'll be in full support of this. I know any unused funds that we awarded you will be returned. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Tungo. Councilman Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I as well will be in support of this one. This is something that, you know, for a nonprofit to return monies and stuff, that is a good thing. But the community needs groups like you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilman Nicholson. Any further comment? Councilman Luby?
So I appreciate the fact that you're wanting to take care of your own people, because you already take care of everybody in town when they need it. So we should be taking care of our own as well. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Councilman Luby. Another question?
Mr. Mayor, I'd just like to comment on the
city manager.
I'd like to comment on the regular returning of city funds. Indeed, USAFE regularly returns city funds. During COVID, there USAFE, as well as a few other community organizations, did write and received approval from council to repurpose some of their funding, if you recall. I think one was Resia Group, another is a senior center. I think they were buying a smaller car. So they don't normally return the funds, but they have called and request for permission to repurpose some of them. And definitely during the COVID, they did. So I just want to give a shout out to the fact that I think they do all try to manage their money as well as what we give them for these programs. And if it's beyond the scope of what it was approved for, we do communicate with them regularly. So I wouldn't want to paint all of them as if they don't.
Thank you, Bill. Any further questions? But thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, next up we have Unalaska Senior Citizens, and their bookkeeper, Kelly Posiomki, is attending remotely, and she is going to speak. Kelly, I don't know if you can see the screen or not, but your 5 minutes starts now. Go right ahead.
All righty, thank you. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and City Council members. My name is Kelly Posiomki, and I am here on behalf of the Unalaska Senior Citizens. To tell you a little about our organization, it was formed in 1991 and focuses on the well-being of the seniors within the community. We offer nutritional and transportation services, light housekeeping, and social interaction opportunities. We have a congregate lunch program which offers a nutritious meal daily and is also an excellent opportunity for group socialization. UNC has supported our lunch program for years, and they work with our staff to ensure that the meals that we provide meet the program needs. As part of the state grant requirements, we have enrolled the assistance of a registered dietitian to ensure that the meals are meeting the dietary guidelines for Americans. We also offer home-delivered meal services to those that are homebound and are not able to attend the congregate lunch program. Currently, our staff serves approximately 485 meals per month, and right now we're up about 20% from last year. Our transportation services are available to those that need a ride to and from the lunch program, the grocery store, the bank, or just to run errands. Currently, we have two vehicles that we operate, the bus and our Suburban. When we have smaller groups, we use the Suburban as it's more fuel efficient and more maneuverable. We use the bus when we are providing transportation and have larger groups, and we also use the daily to pick up the meals from Unicy to transport to the senior center for the lunch program. The bus has a lift on it, which is utilized to get the food containers loaded and unloaded due to their size and weight. Our homemaker services enable us to offer light housekeeping on a weekly basis. With age-related declines in capabilities, this part of our program is an essential component to providing successful aging in place. We also offer weekly activities that include anything from learning how to make an enchilada to painting or playing bingo. A lot of seniors live at a lower limited income level and struggle with the rising housing and healthcare bills, inadequate nutrition, and a lack of access to transportation. Unalaska senior citizens have been fortunate in being able to provide programs to assist those within our community to relieve some of the burdens that can become challenging as we age. We have two full-time staff members that run our programs, as well as a part-time homemaker. We are asking for $69,000 in funding for this upcoming fiscal year, which is a slight increase from last year due to inflation and a cost of living adjustment. Okay. I'd like to thank you for your time in listening to my presentation. And if there's any questions, I am here and will do my best to answer.
I'm sorry, sir, would you repeat that?
I see Charlene was listed also. Is she going to be on there now?
Not that I'm aware of. No, it's just Kelly. Okay.
Do you have any questions?
No, Charlene couldn't make it.
All right, thank you. We have some questions for you or comments. Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you. So last year's application had workman's comp in there, and I don't see that on this year's application. Is has something changed?
I combined them. No, I just put all of the insurances all lumped together. We have the vehicle insurance, board member, general liability, and workman's comp.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Kelly? Well, thank you. Apparently, at this time, no further questions, but if we have any, we'll be contacting you directly. Thank you for your information and program.
Thank you. Thank you.
Kelly, I'll be muting you again now. All right, our final presenter tonight is Unalaska Visitors Bureau. And I understand we have board member Joni Scott here and Catherine McGlashan, their executive director, is attending remotely. Catherine, I just sent you an unmute request. All right, Joni, go right ahead. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Thank you for having me. I am Joni Scott, a board member and treasurer of UVB. Our mission at the UVB is to promote and encourage tourism, to support the development and sustainability of tourism here in Unalaska. We have cruise ships arriving this year scheduled May 8th, and we have 20 scheduled to arrive for the summer. Hopefully they all dock. Looking at our grant application, you can see we are requesting the same amount as last year. We did update our goals to integrate more of an Anungan culture. We are hoping to integrate them through our visitors guide program, our website, our social media, and when cruise ships arrive as well. We have a new executive director on staff that started December 16th. She's been busy submitting our reports, our grant application. She hosted a photography spotlight with Linda Liebeck Robinson. She's been attending community meetings and local meetings and state meetings. She is now in Sitka at a Heritage Culture Conference where she'll speak to a panel on Wednesday with the history of our Indigenous cultures. As a board, we have been busy preparing for our 17th annual wine tasting extravaganza. It'll be on May 6th at the Grand. This is our one big fundraiser of the year where we look forward to bringing the community together and help supporting our program. We thank you for your consideration and all the support that you have given our program. If you have any questions, I hopefully can answer them, or our executive director, Catherine, is also on the call. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I was just curious, how many sources of funding do you guys have?
You guys and our fundraiser, the wine tasting.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Luby. Any further comments, questions? Okay. Well, thank you for your presentation and good luck getting the tour boats in here.
Thank you.
And that was the last entity that's requesting funding from the city under a nonprofit status. Our next item, and
what?
Go ahead.
I know, Mr. You made some more comments. I just want to take this moment to thank staff for putting this all together for us. You know, it takes a lot of work, but having it all formatted for us in the same way is really helpful in us disseminating the information that's on all of the application. So I want to just say thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Bell, then Robinson.
Yeah, I just want to, the one that I did want to bring up is I wanted to talk about the clinic for just a moment and speak to the council on that one. In previous years, that grant has gone towards mental health services, salaries, et cetera. For those services. And over the years, it's kind of morphed into more of a subsidy for the after hours emergency care. So the question becomes then, if this is a subsidy to that service, the way I see it, is it something where we need to look at whether this belongs in here, whether that money, that dollar amount, could be justified in speaking with the clinic, whether it needs to be a higher or lower amount, and whether that money needs to come from a different revenue source, whether it be a tax or some other type of revenue source to help fund that particular service. So I'm hoping it starts a conversation. We know this, you know, that over the years, the emergency services, after hour services, has been an issue as far as funding. And you know, we have loaned or granted money for that services before. But at some point, we probably need to have a bigger conversation about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Councilman Robinson.
Yeah, I wasn't going to speak on the clinic, but I think is. The mental health portion of the clinic went away approximately 2010 or 2011. And for the funding for that was for emergency services. I know one, I'd be really concerned if we didn't have an emergency room there and had to wait until 8 o'clock in the morning when the clinic opened to be able to have those services. They provide this emergency services, but they can't charge for it. The insurance doesn't cover that because they don't have an emergency room doctor. So we need to be cognizant of that, and we need to continue that, because like I said, if we don't have it, I think some people are going to cease to breathe in this community. But I just wanted to, that said, I just want to thank staff for doing the compilation of this This is something that the council used to do years past, and it was a nightmare. So anyway, appreciate you guys. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilman Luby.
Yeah, I think what Tom's saying is, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what he's saying is maybe we need to look at bringing this out of the grant program and funding it with a different source, because it is so important to have those services here, and and maybe we need to restructure it possibly in their funding, I think. And I would agree. I think that, I think we need to expand the clinic as much as we possibly can, and to have those services 24 hours a day, because it's so important. There's so, we are so remote that we depend on that, everybody depends on it for their, their healthcare, especially in the middle of the night, and that's always when something happens. It's always the middle of the night, or it's always on a weekend or after hours. That's, Murphy's Law, I guess. But anyway, I think it would be great to maybe open up a discussion about moving it outside of the grant program possibly, and look at a different funding source for it. Thank you.
Thank you. I agree there's a need to maybe discuss this, but I think that would be a work session where we talk about where that funding is going to come from, where it's going to, where are we going to find it in our budget in the future. It may mean going to the different entities or different businesses. I heard Councilman Robinson say that some of these services are not covered under certain insurance programs. And, the people need to have service when they are injured and not wait till late in the morning. At one time, that's the way it was. If you didn't make it over the night, then that's just the way it was. And that's, if we don't watch out, we're going to head down that road with this discussion. So we got to figure out a way to fund it, or fund a clinic with more funds just specifically for emergency use. That's a discussion we've got to have. And we should have that with the community with, after we've come up with what we believe is our, be able to have money to provide that for. So we'll see where that goes.
It's important to have the clinic at the table too, for the 501c3, when we do discuss that. I'm sure they have all kinds of ideas. As president of the tribe, I have ideas too, so thanks.
Okay, thank you. City manager, I guess we'll look for a directive to you eventually. Thank you. Any further comment? Thank everyone for their hard work and staff. City manager, city clerk, and your staff did a great job. And the community. I know it's hard for some entities, very hard now at least in the last year, and it's not going to get any easier. So we've got to figure out ways to provide services that all these nonprofits provide. And so we'll work with you to try to find an answer. All right, thank you. We'll move to the next item. Are we ready? Item B, next on the work session, is presentation of the FY24 city departmental operating budgets. I'll turn this over to Bill Hamka, acting city manager, to introduce.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. So tonight we have, basically, we're going to go through the a presentation of the city departments and our operational requests to all of you. And I believe I was resoundingly nominated to be the spokesperson for everyone. I don't know how that happened, but I'm happy to do that, especially since one of the first ones up will be the admin, and definitely didn't meet what the goals were. So it's like, hi, Dollar. Yeah, they stick me out first. So let me quick find the right page. And I think it's probably really important to just trying to think, Margie, what page that was. I had the, if you look to page 457 of your packet, you'll jump to that one real quick, Margie, on that. That's really where you see the non-personnel operating expense as the draft budget has been entered, total for all the non-personnel operating expense for all of the departments is $6,894,000. That's a change from the original budgets that were approved of 12.9% from the year before. We were 6.1 million. So it's gone up basically 800,000. And, you know, this is the first time that I've managed this process. And I have to say, as I'm not sure as I was going through, I want to pay attention to these tables because I think some of us may have been looking at the percent change from the revised budget versus the original budget. So you have to bear with me. If you see a funny number, like you're looking, probably best to stick with the original budget because we never know why it jumped under a revision. So my comments tonight will be prefaced with just looking at the original, which if you look at FY23, just for example, the original budget that year was $6,101,506. And then you can see that the draft is the $6,894,000. So if we go through and feel free to ask, I guess, if you want questions, probably by each department or division. Some have more, for example, Public Works, Utilities, Police, there's quite a few, PCR. Maybe hold your questions for each division until that one's done. And the directors are here ready to answer any questions of yours that I cannot. So first up is Mayor and Council. Margie, it's page 458. We can go to that. And basically the parts that we're looking at tonight are, you know, but if you look at the next section, right under total personnel expenses, it's kind of confusing even to me. It looks like that's the heading for that. But really that total operating expenses is just in the bold a little further down. Right, there you go. So in this particular case, your FY23 original budget was $432,000. Got revised to 507 this for FY23. The draft request this year is $530,255. So it's 22.6% over last year. Then again, if you look at the percent change for the revision, it's 4.54. So you see it's really important to start comparing apples to apples in that column. The biggest differences for this change is training services went up from 11,000 to 31. You see these 181% increase. General supplies went from 40,000 to 115,000, and those are the biggest reasons. One thing I should put a caveat on, and I know you all know this, but a lot of the big increases overall you'll find are utilities. Utilities, communications, and travel. Another thing, you know, those went up. You know why those went up. But tonight we're just looking at these. If you have any questions about the mayor and council's significantly increased budget, please feel free to ask. Now, saying that so I can make myself feel better for the next one.
Councilman Tongo.
Yeah. The training services. Training services. Why did it jump so?
Marjorie entered that. She's more than welcome to answer that question for me.
I was asked to add 25,000 to that line item for this next year's budget for council training to have a consultant come out and provide services to you folks on your roles and responsibilities. That's what that jump was. And the jump under general supplies. General supplies is where we budget for the fireworks. You know, that might sound a little odd, but that's the fireworks budget is the general supplies. And there's two shows budgeted in there for next year.
Thank you.
And of course, the travel line went up just because travel costs have increased. We didn't add any planned trips. Travel costs have just gone up.
If I may, I think I'm the one, I know working with Chris, we talked about training, only because there's several, I mean, folks that probably, I don't know what your training history is, but I know sometimes we would bring Karen out here from Anchorage and she would do all the trainings about mission statements and all those sort of things, but not really formal training about, you know, some of the things we should be saying, not saying, all those sort of things. So I had a discussion with Chris about it. If possible, it's probably good to bring them out. I know I was at a nonprofit training from the 4-acre group, and there was a fellow there who does this all the time, and it was interesting to sit there and notice some of the things that, as long as I've been doing this, the things that he pointed out, you're like, ah, that's right, that's why you can't do this, or we should be doing that. So it's just a progressive kind of an idea that if you all are interested, certainly you don't have to, but that's why it's in there as a placeholder.
We had a training at the Grand Aleutian three, four years ago, is it?
Who was that with, though? Karen, right. It's kind of a different training, at least from what I remember, but I wasn't there with all of you, so I don't know exactly what she covered.
Yeah, that was strategic planning.
Yeah.
That was a combination meeting. Councilman Robinson?
Yes, thank you. AML's newly elected officials seminar has got a wealth of information on what maybe we can bring somebody out for that, because I know it's not always easy for folks here to travel to AML in December to be able to, or November to, well, it's actually going to be a December again now, to be able to attend that. So it's important. They point out a lot of do's and don'ts, and I think we can probably reach out to them, and I think and probably get a wealth of information. They may even be able to accommodate us on that. Thanks.
Yeah, I would agree. Intended a good program. Councilman Roby.
Yeah, I actually attended that, and it was a great I did it on Zoom. You know, it was during COVID, and they had all kinds of great information, and I'm not sure that we couldn't do it on Zoom. I mean, it's probably better in person, but, you know, if we're trying to save money, that's a lot of money, you know, so I wouldn't have a problem doing something like that on Zoom again, you know, just to save the travel costs. So that's just my thought.
And you'll... I'm waiting to see if that was the mayor's. It's usually his ringtone that pops up. It's not. All right. I thought maybe that was your ringtone. Yeah, that is just a placeholder. I had no quote, no estimate or anything. I mean, so if we can get that for cheaper, certainly we'd be happy to do that.
I think it's important to have somebody out here. You're going to miss a lot on Zoom. And I've attended these multiple times, you know, for even in the same term, and every time you learn something else.
I just, and if I'm talking too much, please speak up and let me know. But some, I think there are so many changes that happen in just even a given funding year. I mean, you see it, you read about it in the news, what court rulings are happening, what's affecting maybe our state, not others. So it's certainly worth looking at. I know I haven't had a time in this capacity yet to kind of glance through that, but I will be looking at that as well.
That number was selected primarily to get somebody out there. It's not, can't afford to send seven people out, six, whatever it is that people can get away.
Not on 25.
Work and everything else. So looking forward to having somebody coming out there.
Six of you going, would that be the airfare going and coming, right? Yeah, that'd be about it. Are we, any other further questions on your budget, like Manlock Manning, sorry? Okay, then the next is the city administration, city manager's office. So the FY23 operating expenses were $159,356. That is going up by 12% to $178,720. Most of those are due to two, for whatever reason, telephone and fax, as far as the utility has gone up, and travel and related costs. So again, this is for the city manager. I think we looked at how many times the city manager has gone out over the last couple of years and tried to figure out where we might need to raise that. So we raised it by about $4,000 or so, and $5,000, I think. Those are the only real differences from one year to the next. Some we've trimmed down from general supplies. You can see that. Professional services, et cetera. But it still comes out to an additional 12%. I can tell you some of the departments did a much better job sticking to your goals than your recent leader here. So any questions on the city manager's office budget for non-personnel costs?
Just real quick, some of this, the under salaries and wages, is some of that money, is that, or those salaries, are they allocated in other departments also, or is that salary and wage, is that just for the CMO's office?
Well, that salary and wage should just be for the city manager's office. I don't know that that gets allocated out. Like the assistant city manager gets allocated out for some different things, like the housing fund, that supposedly works a lot. I think it's 5% or 10% of the city assistant city manager's salary, but I don't know that the city manager's is allocated, and if anyone knows different.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Councilman Tungle.
Is that a new line item or that we put in, or it's coming from a different line item before?
We did up the moving costs, I believe, for possibly bringing out a candidate. You're correct. I don't think there was one in there the last year. Obviously, there wasn't. So I don't know if you put it in there when you think you might be hiring or how that comes. But since we have an open position technically right now, we budgeted for, in case we need to move someone here and pay for their move.
But we never had that before.
And it hasn't in recent history. Okay. And if, you know, depending on what you do, you may not need that. Any other questions on this one? All right. Okay, the administration office, if you look at the total operating expenses, it was $859,728 was originally approved for the non-payroll side of what admin does. It's per the, again, if you look, 50% increase from budget year to budget year, 34% basically if it was a revised budget. And I can point to a few things. One, insurance has gone up a lot here, and admin pays the insurance bill for a lot of the things in the city. So all the departments that work here in this building pay the insurance, and there's other ones that those will get allocated out. Advertising, we've increased advertising in terms of, some of this is for HR related things. I mean, we're only advertising in some of the basic places for some of these positions, and we want to advertise and do recruiting better. We upped the travel and related from 10,500 to 26,000. And the reason for that is some of the programs that we do work with, some of the conferences that they have, though, we have to pay and we'll get reimbursed. I know there's at least one of those in there for about 5,000 or 6,000. So there are things that we do. We have HR functions and we have risk, and they both probably need to be going out to maintain an awareness of what's happening with these network. And there hasn't been much travel, certainly from risk. And then SHRM hasn't been attended for a while because of COVID alone. So you'll see some of these things start jumping because these were things that were cut out of the admin budget. If you go up to probably the most significant one, that is other professional services. That one has jumped from what was 45,000. That budget was amended this year to 145. That is for the comp study, which is about ready to go out this Wednesday for proposals. And some of the other things that are in that, just off the top of my memory, are I would like to make sure we have a mediator, a professional collective bargaining mediator for us. I think I estimated that at 40, because I certainly, based on how things went this last round, I think by the time that we are prepared to start the whole new round over again, like start with public safety and that union, I'd like to make sure that not only if it was me, I'd have training, but there's someone else sitting there objectively that's done this before. I don't think we were in a good spot last time. Then there's also the city functions on Munis, and Munis is an extremely widely used software across the country for municipalities. I'm not sure if it's because we do county type functions and maybe there's some glitches, but we have the full package for Munis. And a lot of the, what do they call them? Add-ons, modules, infamous modules that currently we're not even using. We need to be able to do that. And sometimes instead of, I can remember Roxana being in here at 5 a.m, being on the West Coast, trying to figure out how to do some of these things, I'd like to get some professional help out here for a week and work with all the different functions that use it. So some of the program interoperability, like for example, Esri, GIS, we have to do a hard transfer twice a year from what's going on in clerks and we burn it onto ours. These things are all interrelated and operable. There's something stuck and we need someone to come out, and we're paying top dollar for the software. So we need to have them come out and do some trainings. And again, it's easier to bring people here than start sending a lot of people out. Those I think I put in for 100,000. I don't know what that'll be. Maybe it's 80. Maybe we only need one person, but I wanted to get that on the discussion here and have a placeholder for that. So that's really other professional services. That's why that is jumped. And I think I have a spreadsheet open and I'll tell you the rest. Well, I have to get back to you because I got a spreadsheet that was sent to me that has like 200 lines, and I don't know why it's like that. So, but the basic is bringing some professionals out, even like ExecuTime, that we're trying to make that full transfer over. I've been one of the biggest critics of ExecuTime, and I was never made aware that some of the other bigger departments had been rolled out, but not everyone. So there's still some training and some consultancy that we need to make some of these software that we buy work, and that's what you'll see in there. And I think there's also money for recruitment. One of the companies that we're working with, Alera, we're hoping to get bids out or get RFPs out and get bids back, but it's basically to look at all of Title III's job descriptions that need updated. And so that's another reason that's $300. Any questions for admin?
I just want to double back and just make sure I'm understanding what you're thinking is as far as that whole $335,000. Part of that is to get Munis set back to where it's working, a certain dollar amount for a negotiator. And what was the dollar amount we were figuring as far as a compensation study?
The comp study, you already transferred $100,000. That's why our consultant or professional services went from 45,000 to 100, and that's in FY23. So that 100,000 is already in, so we're comfortable sending out RFPs. It's the next leg of that, the work to do a lot of the, we want to hire a consulting firm that will go through all of those job descriptions and start making parity, as well as some other issues that Amy, our HR manager, has identified that I'm not collectively recalling right now.
May not have this number, but what did it cost last time for a compensation study? I mean, granted, that was what, 7 years ago, but
yeah. Anyway. I'm afraid I can't answer that right now, but I can get that info.
Thank you.
If there's no other questions, I'll just keep going to the next group. This one's a tough one. I gotta be careful. She's sitting right next to me. This is the clerk's budget. There's not a whole lot there. Of course, it's a small department. There's three folks, and their fiscal year 23 budget was $555,000. The request here is $646,000, which it looks like, it's $104,960 for operating. And it's jumping basically only up to $111,450. That's a 6.2% jump. And I think Madam Clerk would be happy to answer that. I think some of it is basically for our assessment services, and then other professional services has gone up $5,000. Any questions about clerks? And I should double, Clay is on.
Councilman Robbins.
Just a comment, they keep us out of a jail. The clerk's office keeps us out of jail. Thank you for what you do, Margie, and your
You're
staff.
Welcome. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt and just keep moving. I didn't see movement, so I just started moving. So the finance department operating expenses is proposed to go up about 6.6%, an increase from $394,150 this year to $420,200 in FY24. The biggest bulk of that is travel and related costs. Really, you see it going from 13 to 23,000. Those are the big ones, and investment management services is going from 50,000 to up 25,000 to 175. I think Clay can speak to that if you have questions, but I think as our portfolio grows, there's fees and services are a percentage of that. So in a way we're doing well, so it's costing us more because we're doing well. And Clay is unmuted. Would you like to say anything, Clay, or if you have any questions for him, he's on
Zoom. Bill hit the nail right on the head there. The majority of the increase here is uncontrollable costs. Our investment management fees are up, and that's a good thing because they only increase as the value of the portfolio increases. So it's uncontrollable for us. And when we see these costs rise, it's a good thing. It means we're making more money. Thank you.
Anyone have questions for Clay before I move?
Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I'm just kind of noticing the phone, TV, and fax. But why is that increasing? Is there something changing there? I haven't seen any increases in those types of things.
You know, honestly, I was preparing for this, and I started looking at that. And it's not something that I remember jumping out at me when we were doing our dry runs. And so, honestly, you get your... Do you remember, Margie? I don't know.
I have the answer there if I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
You're unmuted.
Thank you. Yes. This object increased because for the first time, and I didn't realize this was true, but we had to add a telephone. We added a mobile phone for our purchasing agent. The former purchase agent had used her personal phone all these years. So that's the reason for an increase there, is at least attributing to that increase.
Okay, thank you. I was just curious. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? I want to make sure before I cut you off. So the next sheet is basically a division of finance, its information systems. And the current year budget is $611,400, and it's proposed to increase to $660,816. It's just over 8%. The bulk of that is software and hardware support. That those go up, the licenses, a lot of the licenses are held up there in finance, and they make sure they budget for all of that. So individual departments aren't doing that. So we're not all budgeting for Microsoft Word licenses and all that stuff. They do all that to make sure they're up to date. And that's the most significant increase for them. And Clay would like to speak.
And once again, Bill's hit the nail on the head, and we'll see increases in this object, software and hardware support throughout the different departments of the city. Once we had the COVID and CARES Act grant funds, it paid us to harden our systems and increase our security. And then when the grant funds went away, now we're having to absorb those costs back into our operating budget. So you'll see increases like this throughout the department. Thank you.
Councilman Bell.
Yeah, just a quick question is how many salary or how many employees fall under IS?
IS has three employees.
Three. Okay. Are there any employees there where their salaries are allocated to another department?
Clay, that would be a question for Clay. Clay, is there a salary allocation for IS services?
I'll have to get back on that, Bill.
Hey, I don't know the answer either. I do know we have a support ticket system, so we do all try and go through that. So just calling, I'm probably one of the worst ones. I still pick up the phone and ask someone to help. And I'm reminded to use the ticketing system. So I think they have a pretty good idea who's using what, or what, at least in terms of daily helps. But I don't know if we're allocating anything.
All right, thanks. These are some of these questions I can follow up with later. So.
Thanks. Councilman Tungle.
So we got an increase on the software and hardware support, but we got a decrease on the computer hardware software. Are we good on the software? Well,
I'm not sure what line you're looking at for object. 56150 computer hardware and software. It was 3,000 this year, and it looks like it's 3,000 proposed, so it hasn't increased.
Now, can I contribute on this one?
Go ahead, please. I see.
If you look on the on this object, it's 56150. You'll see that the cost through over the years it's fluctuating. And working with Jacob Whitaker, we just have different things that we're replacing on different intervals. And I think that's what's happening here. We just have in this budgeted year, we don't have as much to replace as we did in the prior year.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right, then we come to this most nefarious department, planning. The overall budget request for this department went down. As you know, right now we currently have two employees in planning. I mean, my position is technically vacant, and we're still looking for a GIS administrator. The budget this year for operating expenses was $119,500. I decreased that to $107,920. And most of that, I took $5,000 out from the other professional services. I just kind of tracked that, and we haven't, honestly, it wasn't used much this year because of done things over there that I would have done if I'd been, planning director. but that's the biggest savings right there. When I first got here, that was a rather large number because we were talking about, doing survey work and all kinds of places. And that project wasn't fully developed and never implemented. So just so you know, the other professional services and planning has been used for some things that I almost want to say will trigger a study through there, et cetera, because there is usually money in there. planning is kind of a amoeba sort of a department that the roles and responsibilities that we can add easily to or take from, not so easy for other departments, I think. But there shouldn't be too many questions about that, but I'm hoping, happy to answer anything that you have. All right. Next, and I want to be honest here, I see public safety in the audience. This is something you'll see a lot on this next page, public safety. You see a lot of 100% over there. So if you start looking down the personnel, Ruth Marquez and I, we had a discussion. Some of this is the result of trying to deal with the separation of the two departments that happened a while back. But some of the administrative duties, roles, responsibilities never were really spelled out or fixed. And we're trying to go back to more, I think, a consolidated approach to dealing with a lot of the bills that affect those two departments together sharing one facility. So as you see this one is basically your total operating expenses as a, you know it, under public safety admin are decreasing. And you'll see that getting picked up in another division. So it's decreasing from 353,000 to 168,000. And really that's what's going on. Some of the administrative functions are being combined under one division's budget. For example, if you go then to, I think, police under public safety, you'll see that one is increased. It's gone up from $393,792 to $508,000. Yeah, please. I'm on page 466 right now, which is public safety police. And Ruth is out there. If I say anything wrong, Ruth, feel free to speak up. Don't let me go too far down that trail. Looking at that, training services for the police budget has gone from 78,000 to 87,700, a 12.3% increase. You know, we are in recruiting mode for police and send a lot of them out. So that's why you see that kind of a budget. Employee moving costs, we added 10,000 to that simply because they're trying to, I think we still have four vacant positions or we're in the middle of hiring one, so possibly three, including a chief. And then you have really just some smaller increases in there, but that explains the bulk of it for the police section only of the public safety budget. And I'm gonna keep going, and then you see public safety, where are we? Capital, no. Then you have communications, its own budget, and the it's gone from $854,852 to $939,000. That's a 9.9% increase. Employee moving costs have gone up for $5,000. And I'm looking for the other major difference there. Again, it's the telephone. But you also have, then you start seeing bills that you haven't noticed before. This is where you start seeing the costs allocated differently. So all those utilities and those two costs have gone up, and you'll see those spread across these divisions. And I think there's one more, which is corrections. And several things here. This one has gone up a total of 13.7% year over year. That was 1,011,000 this year. It's 1,150,000. And the things that you'll notice, again, we have 5,000 more in moving costs. We have 2,500 more in training services. We have nothing that was, again, then you have utilities. Looks like we have 26 to 30,000 in utilities that weren't there before. And I think that concludes the police budget. If there's any questions for them.
Councilman Bell.
It's kind of hard to see in the numbers here, but you know, what popped into my head was previously with the previous fire chief is he'd made a pitch for needing another admin or another specialist there to take up some of the workload as far as administration duties. In reorging some of this stuff, has that gone back to a previous model before the two departments were separated, or is there still a need for another person in that department?
I'm going to punt to that one to either. Right, we haven't looked at fire budget. That's coming up, but
I know that that need for administrative assistant, it still exists. We're just kind of still transitioning and evaluating what all of those needs really consist of. So, I mean, at this point, I'm not super comfortable saying, yes, we need a full-time position because this is what the scope is. We're still trying to get a handle on it.
No, that's good. Thank you.
Okay, if there are no other questions, we'll dive into the fire and EMS budget. And this one's where you see some differences. It goes from this year, FY23, it's $1,663,000. And it's an increase of, the operating expenses are going from $309,795 to $392,620. That's a 26% increase. However, when you look at it, really electric, propane, you know, this year we budgeted $6,000 for electricity and we've got $34,000 in there for the coming year. Same thing for heating oil. And then we have, gas for vehicles. Obviously, those vehicles are always in motion, so that's gone up respectively. Books and periodicals has jumped. They need some training things that they want, etc. And so that's in the last line down there, that's the increase from 1750 to 5000. And if you have any questions overall about fire and EMS?
Councilman Luby.
Just curious about the water and sewer. The that looked like it took a pretty good hike. I'm just curious why.
I believe it has something to do with the way they've allocated the money, but Ruth or Ben would prefer to answer. That'd be great.
Yeah, so as previously stated, the admin budget being dissolved, that's where you're seeing. So it's actually like a 15% of this increase, that funding is coming from the admin budget being dissolved. We weren't previously allocating funds in for the DPS police building. That was all under that administrative budget. And so now we're having to reallocate that into our budget. And those funds have been moved from the admin into the fire department operating.
Very good. Then we'll move on. It's Public Works. Public Works is another agency entity that has several divisions. We'll start with the admin and engineering. The FY23 budget was $237,000. Proposed budget for this coming year is basically up $30,000 to $267,300, which is a 12.6 jump. And again, it's you're looking at one maybe I haven't mentioned is the custodial services contract. That's gone up from $15,000 to $26,800. And all of the city buildings that, you know, house their own departments, et cetera, those have gone up. Like I said, in this building, administration takes care of it all. But it gets billed out then to PCR, and all of them have their own. That's basically the significant increase for that department. And the next is your streets and roads. And streets and roads operational budget has increased about 11.5% from $599,000 to $668,000. And let me see, the biggest one that I'm noticing is the engineering and architectural services. There's not been anything budgeted for, that's just 50,000. Yeah. So it's 50,000 is being added there, and really it's, that's a big change. I think it's most of it, and the rest are some small ancillary costs. Then under Public Works, again, you have receiving and supply, basically. That this year was 303,000. It's gone to 362 as a proposed. It's up, I'm sorry, gosh, $12,350 is this year's budget, and it's gone up to 12,850, and 4% increase. So there, I mean, not too many things to discuss there about that one, but I'm open to hear any questions you have. And then there's vehicle and equipment maintenance. Let me see if I can steer at the right line this time. That one's actually gone down from 418,000 to 405,000 and some change. It represents a decrease in 3%. And then we have facilities maintenance. And facilities maintenance, their total operating expenses this year are 451,000. And the request is for 484,000. And if you look, I think repair and maintenance services is proposed to increase from 180,000 to 212, which is about a 17% increase. And that's, I believe, the bulk of that increase for that division. And that's all of it for Public Works and all of its components. Are there any questions for that department?
Is the maintenance from having to keep those old vehicles to be maintained or what?
To keep the what, sir?
Old vehicles that we're supposed to replace and keeping them extra few years?
I don't really know. Actually, the vehicle maintenance has gone down couple percentage points, so I'm not really sure. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, vehicle maintenance has gone up. You're right. Vehicle and equipment maintenance. Go ahead and run. So I'm on page 474. Vehicle equipment maintenance, right? 7%. Did I answer your question, Councilman? Or did I talk about the wrong fund? Scott, please come up.
Yeah, when I was before you at the last council meeting, we talked about the major maintenance plan, the electrical panel in the warehouse, and I believe the painting for the utility building and the painting for the Swanson House all were moved into the operating budget. So that's what that 17% represents. And I believe your other question, that'll show up in the rolling stock. Yeah. We talk about that tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you, Scott.
All right. So if we continue, the next department is the PCR, Parks, Culture, and Recreation. We'll go start with the administration budget. Operating expenses for that are flat. So Roger hasn't propose any increases or decreases for that function. Then if we go to recreation programs, that is got a slight increase from 102,400 to 123,400. And you can see that the increases basically travel and related costs went up a bit, and so did other professional services. And those are the two, well, and also food and beverage related for their programs, about 4,000 there. So overall, their operating expenses increase basically 19,000, I think. 21,000, excuse me. You move to the community center operations. The operating expenses this year are $320,400 and they're proposing $362,900, the 13.2% increase. You can see again the telephone, fax, and TV. Then there's the repair and maintenance are two of them. I'm quick looking. The rest of it is all uncontrollables when it comes to all of the utilities that they wind up have all increased. And that brings us to the library, another component. And the budget for the library this year is $319,890, original budget. And the proposed is $374,000, an increase of 17%. And again, if you look, a lot of that is going to be utilities. And remember, this is going from an older building to a new building, which is larger. And then custodial services went up about $11,000, and the rest have been held as flat as possible, I think. And then the next is the Aquatic Center. My favorite place is the pool. This year, the operating expenses were $67,100. Proposed budget is $89,000. Looks like an increase of 33%. Again, it's chemicals have increased by, I want to say, $5,000. General supplies have increased. Shipping costs for these types of supplies, those costs have gone up. And other professional services has basically doubled from $3,500 to just over $7,000, $7,500. So the total operating expenses proposed are $89,600 for the pool this coming year. And last, I believe, are parks, and that's flat, holding steady from $43,500 from this current year into next year. And I think that concludes all of the department requests. I'm happy to take any questions or try and get answers back to you by tomorrow or the next meeting. Oh, do we want to go through those? Sorry. I missed those all together in my review. Holy cow. Well, the grants is hard because we haven't decided what we're doing with one, obviously. But if you look, so then grants, FY23, we have for expenses, the $1,266,000. It's only going up, I think, I'm talking about this one here, the nonprofits, right? Proposed is one up 2%. That's as if depending on how you fund. So I think we entered those basically what the requests were.
Robinson.
So the overall increase in this is a long ways from the council's goal of a 5% increase. So how do we get that down?
Well, I mean, speaking from, you know, where I'm sitting, obviously the admin, we can cut down the admin. That was a significant increase. I wanted to put that in there so we can have a discussion about some of those goals and priorities. If we don't get them this year, then some I certainly want this year, you know, mediation assistance, and then, you know, the work with HR in terms of getting attracting candidates here and all of our job descriptions. A lot of these increases, and I'd have to see if we can, maybe Clay knows offhand, but the utility costs and the travel costs alone are things that are outside the scope. And this would one just cut into those and start saying that's not going to happen. That's probably one, because a lot of these costs are fixed. A lot of them are not something that we can do a lot about. I mean, costs for licenses, for the software that we use, all those things that you see going up in finance and IS. I mean, things that are related to fuel, oil, electric, even though there are utilities, we have to pay for those proprietary funds. That's how it works. You know that. I'm just stating that for my own edification and make sure I check that box. But I think really, I'm probably admin when I got in and saw all the things happening. I thought, I'm going to just kind of give you the lay of the land, what's kind of not been happening there. I think everybody else has done a really yeoman's job of trying to make sure their budgets are slim as possible. So I'm sure we can go through and cut out some operation like books and training manuals or any of those funds. But the big numbers are those uncontrollable costs. Clay, feel free to chime in if you have another answer. No,
I absolutely concur. We tried to, when we were outside of the budget or when we exceeded the budget goal and these operating costs, we had the discussion. We looked for savings in other areas to offset those increases, but we couldn't always find those, the uncontrollable costs. And then also, you mentioned the utilities.
Right. So in the world, if you can't afford to do something, you need to figure out how to do it better. And I think that's something we really need to bear down on and figure out, how can we do this better? I would hate to see people laid off, but that is not something that's off the table. Because like I said, if we can't afford to do it, we need to figure out how to do it better. And like I said, this is a long ways from what was the council goal of a 5% increase online. So, I mean, I guess, were we wishing for something that just was not going to happen?
I think, honestly, from being around a lot of different places, I think it's hard for council to set a goal that can be realistic until you see what comes in. I mean, you're applying an overall percentage to all these different functions that have so many variables. I see it as my job to make sure we're not asking for a $500,000 piston bully right now, or spare boats, or something.
I don't think you're going to get
it. Right? But I mean, not put that in there. You don't see that. But at the same time, you know, look at what the staff and what your organization is going through this funding year. I haven't asked Clay, but what's our salary savings with having, 20 to 30 vacant positions this whole fiscal year? And that's going to be a big number. So I do ask you, I come in here cautiously realizing I'm tepidly performing this function the first time ever. If I could meet that 5%, I would have definitely pushed for it. I'm not coming in here to have my first task with all of you fail. At the same time, you have to look at the whole picture of what you've been dealing with the last several years in terms of services. I don't think that we did ourselves any justice going into union negotiations without experienced people on our part representing the city. There's different things that I think you need to invest in to make sure that we save money and it may cost a little more rather than just saying, oh, we met that goal and we cut all this out and then it costs us 29% more this year because we made, cuts where we shouldn't have. So I put that out there because I think the things that we've asked for are important, and if we need to cut more, we will go back to that table. But I wanted you to make sure you have a good picture of what we're looking at.
So I'm trying to find out an overall increase in budget here in your memo.
Can I make a comment here, Bill?
You help me out there, Clay.
Yes. Councilor Robinson, your comment's a good one. The 5% did seem a little bit conservative once we started looking at some of these uncontrollable costs and the way that they increase. And then I also wanted to remind the council that this is our spending plan, but when we look back at what's actually happened, when we look at our actuals compared to what we budgeted in any of these prior years, we've got budget slack. We're not spending everything. Right. So I know in finance last year we were 90% spent. We had 10% unspent at the end of the year. And I would expect that across a lot of these governmental departments, at least, is that we're not going to spend all of the budget. So it's reasonable for us to have a certain amount of budget slack in there, just so we don't have to come back to the council for every little for little things, you know what I mean? And we are coming if we have something big. And that's what this allows us to do. So even though the increases are there in case we need it, I know that in the past, traditionally, we haven't needed it.
So yeah, you're right. We haven't needed it in the past, but I think things are changing here. And I don't think we've seen the real numbers as to what those changes are going to be yet. But we've been lucky in the past.
I asked Margie to go to page 457 of the packet, because I think, and Clay helped me out, you'll see is a general fund budget summary, and all the departments are listed there. And if you come across, it's a difference of 6.1 million to 6.8. And then the change over year, it looks like it's 13%.
That's a lot.
It is. And I think I could get you, we can work to show you just what overall, what is the utilities of that number. If we just take that big number and, you know, aggregate them all instead of line by line by line, what is that that we're budgeting for? And can you actually give you a total of what are the uncontrollables and then what are some of these other, you know, wants that are needs, but they're wants, you know, trainings and things like that. We haven't cut that out and hope for the best next year. But some of them I would definitely, you know, speak up for more than others.
I understand the uncontrollables, but like I said, if we can't afford to do it, we need to figure out how to do it better. And whether that means cutting staff to see if we can, you know, save there, whether it means contracting some of those services out, how do we save money, you know, for the city to be able to do it?
Point well taken.
You're looking at me like I'm supposed to say more. Am I supposed to continue, or does anyone else have any? Mayor?
Can we get a breakdown on some of those other services? That seems to be driving a lot of these too, right? A list of other services that we...
I'm trying to... What services are you talking... You mean the utilities costs, or what services, sir? Oh, like other professional services. Yes, we'll definitely be able to. I will get that to you.
What all those, at least give us an idea of what those other services
are. Very fair.
Thank you.
Councilman Luby.
So this isn't really a balanced budget, right?
Clay, would you care to address Ms. Luby's question if we have a balanced budget or not? I think we're deficit spending or spending out of our unappropriated balance, but I'll leave it to you to have a better answer than mine.
Well, that's a pretty good one. Yes, and it's exactly what we've done in the past. We plan to spend more than the revenue sources will allow. And if you look on page, I think it's page one. If you look on page one at the overview, it will show you. Yes, I'm not sure what page this is. Yes, that's the page right there. If you go down to the bottom, you can see that the first general fund net. In the first column, it has 4.5 million. See that? That's the 2021 actual. In that year, we would have budgeted to at a deficit. The same thing for FY22. So You're correct. But because we've underspent our budget and we've either underspent or a combination of revenue sources exceeding the budgeted amounts, we haven't been in a deficit position.
So if everything went according to the budget, we'd basically be almost $7 million in the hole. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I was, that's one of the reasons I don't really like doing the property taxes ahead of time. Maybe we needed to go a little higher to cover some of this stuff. But anyway, that's all. I just wanted to make sure that I was reading that right. Thanks.
You're welcome.
That's it, Bill. I don't know if we have any real discussion on this because it's, it takes a little bit to absorb this. I figure out now we need to relook at the budget, or do we look at spending? Do we look at what Councilman Robinson has mentioned, live within our budget? That may mean cut of personnel or hours. Something. Councilman Bell.
Yeah, I just make a quick comment, and it kind of plays off of what Councilman Robin Hitchison's been saying here as far as cutting costs. And I think it's been in the back of everyone's mind over the last few years that maybe some of the cuts just to meet a goal have been a little too aggressive. I guess going forward, we hear from different departments that there are efficiencies that could be had. I don't know that that adds up to a large percentage in trying to be more efficient in this budget. I know for me, I'm looking for, at least to be confident that we have not cut this budget too short on this one to where we are having to cut services that we need or defer maintenance or any of those type of things. So just having that confidence in the budget numbers will be important moving forward. The fact that we're showing a $6.8 million deficit, which we seem to, budget every year, is a concern. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Okay. There's no further discussion on the. We'll take a break.
Can we take a little
break? Yeah, we're going to take a little break and see that going out in the hallway.
Yeah.
So we're going to take 5-10 minutes or 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Break.
At 8:25,
be back at 8:30. Thank you. Okay, we'll call the city council back to order. We're still in the work session. Continued discussion. Any questions for Bill? Any comments on the council and mayor's budget? None. Okay. You got a comment? Question?
Oh, I was just going to, like Bill, this is the first year I think you've done the complete budget or been part of the complete budget process. And maybe you can just get a comment on how you think the whole thing went.
Who, me?
To this point.
So, we always nice to see other people get in trouble.
Go ahead, Bill.
Besides me. I think just bear in mind that what I've noticed this community do better than other places that I've been, like just in general, we budget conservatively. So we budget conservatively on our revenues, right? And we typically tend to we're not going to know what some of these costs are, so we'll aim a little higher so that we come in under rather than have to come back for a budget amendment. So we're kind of double-edged sword. On one, we're making sure we're not overcompensating for what we think we're going to come have in all of our revenues. And at the same time, we're putting in some higher. So, I mean, we, for example, the administration budget, I don't have a quote for Munis, and I don't have a quote for all those things that I'm talking about. It could come in at 200. I don't know, but I'm budgeting higher to be conservative so that it's there. So you kind of have, we're saying we have less money to play with, but we're trying to be conservative so we don't have a bunch of budget amendments. So I think there's probably more to work with in there than what's out there. So that's one thing I know we'll take a look at in addition to some of the line items that are more significantly increasing. I can say that. But otherwise, I sat with all of the directors and with Clay and with Chris, and I think everyone came through. There's a lot of new people that have moved up into those positions, obviously. Some are doing things differently, better. I can tell you that we have Scott, for example, on Public Works, and he's gone around and met with everybody instead of sitting there and not and taking guesses. And some of the ways that the fund accounting has happened, how they bill for things, it would just be thrown in one giant $200,000 drawer instead of budgeting for what facilities maintenance and building maintenance and actually being a little more refined. And I know he's done that really well. And I think you'll see that with some of the new folks that are here. You have some acting directors, you have public safety, they're out there doing things. Ruth is looking how to consolidate some of the numbers for better understanding of what's happening. And so you see, it's kind of, I look and I'm trying to read these for the first time. I'm looking at the wrong line half the time, right? I'm looking at the total instead of that one. And I think they did a decent job knowing that a 5% is your goal. But I mean, that's your goal. And so when we come in, it's going to be the job for the directors and for you to just kind of see if we have to stick to something that, like 5%, we're what, at 12, then there's a good 8% in there that we're going to have to like bargain for hard on things that we think are most important and don't want to give. And then you're going to ultimately, it's your budget. This is the public process. So, I mean, everyone has an opportunity to listen to what's happening. Maybe we're not going to fund something that we always do, and the public will understand, I guess, because they hear this discussion or it's in the news, and this is why it's not going to happen. But it's not as simple, I mean, you all know that, as just making cuts and then we walk away. But the services are what people are used to, and if we affect those, then we'll hear about it. So, I mean, we're all, I think, on the same boat. It's just how to get there. And like Clay says, there's always, we used to call it salary savings. There's always salary savings. There's always money that's coming back because we don't, it looks like deficit spending up here, but there's how much money comes back every year from what's not spent because of that budgeting process where we're conservative. That's why you have all that money left over every year. We're not budgeting to the nines. So just keep that in mind. That's, you've seen that over and over. I don't know if anyone's said that in a while, but that's what I see here. And it's nice to come in under budget, but if, you know, one guy said, I'm always under budget. Well, when you say you're going to do something like, you know, change a locker room door and it's $1 million, well, of course it was only 10,000, right? Not a million. So some of it is the homework that we do. We got new people. I think they've done really well. They've done really well. If they take it from the source, my first time too. So.
Councilman Robinson.
So I said it a few times, I'm concerned about the revenues. There's some things happening here that we haven't been able to quantify yet to actually get a number on. We've always in the past been able to afford because we had the revenues in excess of what we budgeted. But I think we're going to see a reduction in that. Yes, the cost of fuel is high. Likelihood of going down, maybe not. But that brings costs up across the board. What we're not seeing right now is these seasons ending short, you know, really quick. and you see the entire service sector vacate the island, and they're no longer getting the sales tax for the services that they provide, keeping this fishing fleet going. And we also see less fuel sales in that. So that is my concern. Shortened seasons. I think the bee season is probably going to wrap up mid-August this time this year. And everybody's going to go away. So we leave, we're left with a few smaller fisheries, but that's money that we aren't getting in our coffers, in our revenues.
So I,
thanks.
I'm not sure protocol here. I just know I've talked with our fish consultant, Frank, and you know, he seems to have a differing opinion of what's happening here with pollock and some of the other and cod. He's not really sure why we're in a panic mode. So I'm not sure, maybe we need to have Frank on here the next time we talk about what we pay him to keep track of this for us. And maybe he can enlighten either me or all of us on what his understanding is of what's going on. I understand some of them are shortened season and canceled season, but when you look at what that brings into your overall budget, by which one, somehow we've had this discussion a couple of years in a row and we still come out on top. So I'm all for being conservative, but I don't want to be, you know, one of the sky's falling. I can't speak to it any more than that because I'm, as you know, I just learned halibut have two sides, two eyes on one side of their head a few months ago. So I'm not a fishing expert, but I do know when I hear alarm being raised and it never happens, that we need to relook at how we're looking at that then. And I'm saying that respectfully because we seem to be doing well each year when we're worried about these fishing seasons, quotas, how much is coming in. I don't know if we're just being lucky or if we're not looking at it right. So,
well, one thing is Mr. Kelty looks at fish taxes. He doesn't look at taxes raised through the service sector that is out there mending nets, that is out there fixing electronics, that is out there welding and repairing vessels and all that gear. He doesn't look at that. So that's a difference there. Yes, we have the quotas. The quotas are crazy high. They're catching them really fast. And yes, we will get the revenues from the fish taxes there. But what I'm saying is the taxes that are going away are from the service sector of this community. And it's a different monster. We've never looked at that before. That's probably one of the reasons we can't quantify how that went. And
sure,
this year, I think, you know, the fish taxes were there. Probably better than expected, as they always were. And the fuel sales taxes were off the charts because of the high cost of fuel. You take that out and run that cost of fuel down, and you're going to see what I mean.
Well, thank you. I'll look at that with probably Clay and someone else. Even. It doesn't help me to look at it blind. I mean, I'll look at it with someone who can help me figure out things and see for myself what makes sense and then bring it back here. So I appreciate that, but a reminder about the ancillary businesses that support all of this industry.
It's huge.
Okay, any other questions or discussions about that since I threw my neck on the line in that one? Okay, so maybe what page are we on for the proprietary? Thank you. Just a moment, folks. All right, thank you for your patience. So we can start with the electric proprietary fund. And all I can do is basically just reiterate what we see happening here. And if I'm looking at the wrong line, please tell me. So the electric administration costs for basically electric fund, we have administration, production, and maintenance. And we have the overall cost down in this proprietary fund, 13.5% in administration. We're down 3.1% in production costs and down 1.27% in our line repair. You know, some of that is due to the way we're doing that. We have a contract with a private company that's doing that for us. So what that means is we've moved the money from, you know, payroll to the services. So sometimes you have to look at how these accounts play off of each other. If you want to look through that, a production, some things that are down is just some of the budget items from professional services in production is down $35,860 to $33,000. Got $5,000 out of tech services. General repair services, we've gone from $168 to $154, et cetera. The biggest one were probably, you can see fuel, generator fuels from 11.9 million to 11.6. So. So then when you look at the actual, I'll be trying to see here though. Operating, I think, what number, Clay? I'm not sure which number here best serves what you're looking for here. If it's the operating profit cash basis, which is going from, 1.7 million in our FY23 budget to the draft budget is 1.5, is down to $100,000. Okay. For that. That overall proprietary fund net profit or loss, basically in FY23, the net profit or loss 23 is 3.7 million loss, and we're looking to project a $518,000. I'm looking at these numbers correctly. Steve, am I looking at these correctly?
Bill, this is Clay. Can I make a comment here?
Yes, please.
When we look at the proprietary fund overview tomorrow, we'll see that the same things happening across the proprietary funds, the same phenomenon that we discussed in general government, and that is we're budgeting a use of a fund balance, or we're budgeting at a deficit, then we're always, or in most cases, and definitely with the electric fund, we're going to be better than the budget. And we'll see that tomorrow. And that's in the, on the memo for the financial statements covers that point also. So even though we've budgeted at a deficit here, we're not actually realizing that deficit amount in our actual results.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, I'm just gonna let's run through it the same way we looked at the general funds, the same way we looked at it. And so can you go to page 489? That's the electrical proprietary administration. That would be the first part. And when you go down to the bottom, you can see total operating expenses under original budget are up 6%. All the way down at the very bottom, you can see it's down 12% because some of the depreciation costs, insurance and whatnot went down. But let's just concentrate on the total operating expenses. It doesn't look at depreciation. So that'd be up 6%. So some of the things that happened is we increased training services. So we have a new deputy director and get him out and train him up a little bit. You can see under other professional services, and you're gonna see this on electric, water, wastewater, and solid waste. There's a big increase, and that's because we're funding a rate study. So you're gonna see that big increase in each of the administrative budgets to fund that rate study. Rate study is going to be in the area of probably $100,000. And then the other thing that happened was travel. You can see that fiscal year 21 and fiscal year 22, there was no travel at all. And then we budgeted travel, but we didn't travel. So we have a draft budget for some travel. So that would be the utility administration portion of electric. Page 490. This is the production part of electric. And when you go down to that same line, total operating expenses, original budget, you can see it's up 13.59%. But if you just go up one line, you'll see that diesel is up 14.62%. So essentially, there's some reduction actually in operating costs, but diesel's up. Besides that, we made some reductions in engineering architectural services, some reductions in software. That's usually set by City Hall, actually. Technical services were reduced just to more or less match what was had been happening historically. And then the line crew, this is the most confusing one, I'll tell you. It's 491, and that's because of the Optumera contract. It makes it quite confusing because we, under other professional services, I can tell you that it's working. We're probably going to end up for the year, maybe $700,000 or $800,000 in payroll for the line crew. It's a good number. I think we're budgeted at $1 million, so that's working. It really makes this look odd, but things that we've done besides continuing the Optumera contract is that we have budgeted more money for infrastructure. We have to buy more transformers as more growth. So we budget a little bit more for the general services. You'll see that compared to the original budget is 18%. We didn't really increase anything that much. So maybe Clay can help, or I can take a little deeper dive on that. But I know it's because of the Optumera contract. We reduce it in payroll, and then it ends up it goes into other professional services, and then it's a line item transfer, and it's a little confusing. If you want more information on that, I can spell it out a little better, but it's even confusing a little bit for me. Page 497 is Water Proprietary Utility Administration. Going down to that same total operating expenses, you can see it's up 15%. The reason it's up 15% is because we have that $25,000 for the rate study, which on a relatively small budget, it's a fairly big impact. Software hardware support, that's set by City Hall. You can see water sewer is up, solid waste is up. And then some reductions. If you look all the way down the bottom under total utility administration, you can see that it would be down 3% due to reductions in depreciation and interest expense. Page 498 is water proprietary water operations. And you can see that there aren't a ton of changes. If you look at that total operating expenses, that same line is down 1.84%. There were just some minor tweaks. And we increased in sampling. We're gonna start sampling for PFAS. We did it actually last year. It's an expensive test. We have to send it to the East Coast, but we had no detect. So it's not really a surprise. We have really clean water, but we decided we'd get ahead of the curve and start testing for it before the government made us. And this year they're making us. We don't have any. That's the good news. Page 504 is wastewater proprietary. And if you go down to that same line, you can see it's up 4.73%. And that's basically due to that big fat increase for the rate study, and then some reductions here and there. And of course, when you look at the original budget, you know, you see it on all the, everybody's got that 9 point something percent for personnel costs up there. And that kind of factors into it. Page 505, wastewater proprietary. You look at that same line, total operating expenses, you can see it's down 0.77%. I'm going to use the wastewater as an example of exactly what Councilmember Robinson talked about. And if you look at electricity actual in 2022, it was 128,000. We're budgeting a couple years later, 132,000. If you look at heating oil, 1,000. This year we're budgeting 93,000. They are freaks with the thermostat. Poop don't care. So that's we got the thermostats turned down pretty aggressively, the price of heat and oil. I know you can't do that in an office, but we're very much cognizant of how expensive things are. And so I know prices are up on these things, on the commodities, on utilities, but we're doing everything we can to keep it down. If you're like me, then your wastewater bill is your biggest number on your utility bill. It's painful. It costs me more than the lights. So we try to keep that in mind. Going to solid waste, page 511. You can see under that same total operating expenses is up 27%. This is a fairly small budget. The original budget was 114,000. So that 25,000 weighs in really heavy on that. And so that pretty much where we got to the 27% is the rate study. And we just have one more. Would be the solid waste operations. Looking at that same line, you can see total operating expenses. 512. The total operating expenses under the original, change from the original budget is 1.73%. We just made some minor tweaks, really just to recognize just historical usage on some things. There aren't really anything. We took away moving costs. We're not gonna move anybody from off island for a solid waste operator position. So there's not, I don't really feel like it's a need to budget for it. And we had a fairly big reduction in heating oil. So overall, that's where we're at with utilities. There's a lot of numbers. I'm here to answer any questions you might have. I know that for the actuals, when you combine all the utilities from 2019 to 2023, the actual amount spent on operating is down 2%.
Councilman Robinson.
So that electric fund, when it was an enterprise fund, and prior to us having a COPA, you should have seen some of those numbers. I mean, it was really tough to track.
In 2020, the price of diesel was $1.12, and we got to almost $6 a gallon for a while. It's really hard. It's hard to budget for diesel. That's why I've been asking for a budget amendment every year. Hopefully it's, they're saying that it's going to go down to maybe $75 a barrel next year. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Tom?
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
I think that was 2%. You want to come up? I think in that vein, it'd be good to have Peggy come up and present the reports. So.
Thanks. I actually don't have the budget pulled up in the packet, so I'm on different page numbers than you are. I've got it pulled up in a format here. The ports fund this year is budgeting for $9.2 million in revenue sources. The vast majority of that is charges for services. That includes projected increase in volume and a 5% increase on our overall charges for fees and services. Excuse me. That's an increase over last year. Last year, I think it's about an 8.5% increase over what we budgeted overall, or 7.5, I guess, by the time we take into consideration the intergovernmental transfers are down. The key as we look at the operating expenses for the port's budget, the facility is broken into different divisions. And the facilities, with the exception of Bobby Stores, the operating revenues cover the operating expenses. When we look at the deficit that we're budgeting for, we're budgeting expenses at $10.3 million. We're budgeting $9.2 million in revenues. When we look at that, that's inclusive of everything that we know today. So that's, we haven't been talking about the payroll piece, but that's included in that number, as is our depreciation costs, as are any transfers out for capital projects, which for us this year is very minimal. It's about $500,000. So we are budgeting for a deficit of a little over $1.2 million. And overall, we need to keep in mind that $4.2 million of that in that budget is depreciation. So we're covering everything, depreciation, operating costs, payroll, transfers out for capital, minus $1.2 million. So let's go ahead and we'll walk through the provisions. And just kind of let you know where things lie and what the high points are. Under the proprietary fund, we have the Harbor Office. That's most of our administrative pieces. Let's go down to the next page. That's our revenue breakdown. We can go through that if you want, but I don't think it's, there we go, thank you. The biggest increase you'll see here is under other professional services. We are also planning for, there's two studies that we're budgeting for there. One of them being a rate study, because while we applied a 5% based on council goals of keeping our budget within 5%, we knew we were gonna have to take our revenues up at least 5%. But we need to have a proper rate study. We've already started laying the groundwork with that now and working on getting an appraisal of all of the uplands for UMC, like Cargo Dock, Carly Moses, so that we know that we're, you know, charging appropriately for that. But we still have to go through and do a proper analysis and weigh it with the cost of inflation and cost of living and all those kind of things with the cost of maintenance and operating the facilities. So that $70,000 represents those two studies. It's a study for rates and it's a study for demand for the cruise ship stuff and the coming across the entrance channel. Other than that, there is a small, it's 100% increase, but it's, I think if I'm looking at it correctly, thank you. My eyes want to jump around too, Bill. I think that's Postal Service. Those are just based on what's actually, you know, being billed to us. That's done by OS memberships. Sorry about that. Yes, memberships have gone up. We have increased our membership fees for the Harbor Association, which is a professional organization that provides training services for all kinds of professional needs, facility security, capital projects, grant writing, some of those kind of things. So those have gone up, and we sponsor the three manager level positions at those memberships. And also the Pacific Coast Maritime Association, we're members of that. So those costs have gone up. That's what that represents. I don't think we really need to do anything. And the food and beverages have just generally gone up. We try to really keep those things at a minimum, but there are things that we have obligations for in terms of employee appreciation, business meetings when we are, you know, working on contracts and negotiating various opportunities within the port. So we're pretty conservative with those things, but the costs have gone up. So we put that in there. And squeeze the next page. So Unalaska Marine Center, there's just a couple of things to highlight here and some things that are probably notable. The biggest cost increase are utilities, with the exception of electrical. And the electricity has actually gone down because the Coast Guard vessels have changed and they can no longer use the shore tie-in that we have at the Coast Guard dock. So that's in the works under another project. But for now, they're not using it. Most of them are not using it because they're not compatible with their systems. And then we did budget for some snow plowing. Hopefully we don't need that, but if we do need that, we don't want to have to come for a budget amendment to get it. And general insurance is up a little bit. That's out of our control. I think we can move on to the next facility. Spitting Light Cargo Dock. I think what we're looking at here for increases, we budget to actual and anticipated increases. And so sand and gravel will be up on all of our facilities because we based on what we used this year and what we've had to reorder. We order in advance, but then we get partway through into the winter. And this year we had to order some additional. So we're budgeting for what we actually used this year. Port security, this one's a little bit different. Typically, when we talk about port security, we're talking about spending. The expenses will be met or exceeded by what we bill out for security services. In this case, we are actually budgeting for some general supplies that we don't get to bill out directly, and that's the TWIP card readers. The cruise ship industry and Homeland Security will be requiring that we have TWIP card readers. And it's been kicked down the road several times, and we're now facing that. So that's in the budget. That's not something we get to bill back for directly. We are hoping that we can write a grant for that, but we are going to have to purchase them. Right, the next one. Yeah, go ahead. CEM, we're looking at similar increases, solid waste. There's nothing there that's really within our control. Solid waste, custodial supplies are across the board. Repair and maintenance, the dock does require certain things, and we've had some of our water lines that have broken. In the last couple of years, we've had to go in with some water line repairs, and we've had some pedestals that have been knocked out. We have just this week found a better distributor for the pedestal, so we may be able to have some savings there, but we're 12 years into that facility, and some of these things are needing some attention. So not crazy expensive, but it is going to go up. Bobby Stores, God bless them. The water and sewer is up. That may be very well because we've had some leaks that we haven't been able to catch, but we've budgeted to accurate. We are working desperately to be on a schedule to have that replaced. And so some of those pieces will, you know, settle down, the maintenance pieces of those kind of things. We can only patch so much, and that budget will look different. But for this year, we're budgeting to actual, and we've put in a pretty healthy general supply, which will be things that we need to try to keep things up and moving until we can get the floats replaced. Transfers out. This is the restroom. As it stands today, we've reached out and got basically a kit type program. We've got the general layout and we're waiting for a full material list, but this was in the original kind of scope, plus a contingency and shipping. So Vehicle maintenance is not anything that's within my control. That's budgeted by Public Works. Facility maintenance actually covers the Coast Guard Morale Shack. They cover the warehouse at UMC, and they cover the buildings at CEM. Other than that, the rest of the facility maintenance, like the harbors, the floats, the docks, those maintenances fall on the Ports Department. And then, of course, our office building is owned by another entity. So facility maintenance, while I can't really speak directly to all of their budget line items, they really cover those facilities for us. Okay. That's the port facilities. We can talk about the airport in a minute, but they want to ask questions on harbor stuff, ports and harbors.
Councilman Dungal.
On the travel, are you planning on, is that the fare being high cost or?
It is.
84% on that one, on the travel.
Yes, so there is a high cost of that. And there's several trips that have been kicked down the road. So we schedule for three personnel to go to the Harbor Conference every year. And depending on where that's at, also drives the expense. So there's the Harbor Conference, and that's an incredible training opportunity. That is the main training opportunity we have for our administrators. I'm also the chairman for the chairperson for the Aleutian Islands Waterway Safety Committee. We have not been able to meet in person since COVID, but it is time to pull that back together and get the managing board back together. We're going to have some changes, and that's an important program for the Aleutians and the Pribilof Islands. And there's a 29 member committee. So the city has funded my travel for that. And we do a lot of, you know, teleconference meetings, but we do some in-person as well. And that's been funded by the department. There's budget in there for SWAMC and AML for port travel. I don't always attend those. It just really depends if there's relevant pieces of opportunity on the agendas. So it depends on what's on the agenda, whether or not I travel for those things. But that's also in those budgets. So, and yes, the expense. The city was, you know, when we were setting our budgets, the city was working on negotiating the rates with both airlines. And so we budgeted for, you know, worst case scenario.
Thank you. Continue.
Okay, on to the airport. The airport, I can read my chicken scratches here. We are budgeting expenses at $613,000 and revenues at $549,000. That is a conservative number. We have not budgeted for the one vacant position that we have, which we do hope to have a tenant for, but it's, you know, a bird in the hand. So that is not considered into the revenues. And we also have another business that is building a kiosk. Their contract has not been fully finalized yet. Once they do, that will also bolster that revenue a little bit. It's not going to be huge. It's not going to make up $100,000 but or $60,000, but it will make a little bit of a difference. So again, like the ports, this considers everything. This is payroll, this is facility maintenance, this is vehicle maintenance, this is operating costs. So we're starting to close the gap. And as we're starting to close the gap on, you know, the airport, we are desperately needing to do something with the airport. So there goes our costs again. We can look at a couple things. There's some unknowns. Our lease, so just a reminder, the city owns the terminal building, the state owns the land, and our lease was a 40-year lease, excuse me, with them. It expires in July. We are currently in negotiations with them. We do not know what that's going to do to the rate. So there's going to be some changes there. We have budgeted as is. but that also could drive the expenses. So other than that, let's go ahead and if you would please. I just want to make sure we're highlighting anything of any. That's charges for services. Let's go ahead and scroll down. We did increase the snow plowing budget for that. Oftentimes we will, the airport of all places, and yes, thank you. And the other professional services, we have also, we also put in $15,000 to begin scoping some kind of redesign, remodel for efficiencies within the airport. We have to do something with the bottlenecks. We have to do something with, you know, only having, you know, two restrooms, some of those kind of things. So we've just put some money in there to start the scoping of that, and we'll see where that gets us. And hopefully we can align that with the master plan, but we'll see what happens. Okay, I think that's it for the airport.
Councilman Luby.
I'm curious what happened with the revenue side of things. How did it go down? Last year we added the
Lucianaire?
Yes. No, not a Lucianaire. The kiosk. Denina. The charter business.
So a couple of things. We added those, but that was partway through fiscal year, right? I don't think we got them in there until September, was it? Yeah.
Yes, but they're in 2023, right?
Partially.
Okay. So, but we're predicting less revenue next year?
We are, because we have more vacancy, believe it or not, because we didn't, we budgeted in FY23 for, so you do the budgeting in the fall, in the spring, right? So we budgeted for full occupancy. And that was probably a mistake, but we budgeted for full occupancy. We didn't see full occupancy. We still don't have full occupancy. So this year we were budgeting for actual, and hope that we can fill space F, which is the vacant old travel agent. And then actually, I misspoke a little bit. We've got three potential spaces on the move. Lucian Airway is in the process of mapping out what they would like to do for a counter extension. We still have space F, which was not taken in the original RFP process. And then the kiosk, which is in the contract right now, the sublease contract with the state. So we'll have potentially two new tenants, two new spaces to lease, and then one that's still vacant.
Okay.
But those are not included in that number yet.
Why it was actually a reduction in revenue when I thought we put more people in there. So
yeah, in FY23, we had just lost the two travel agencies because COVID, there was some CARES Act funding that covered some of their rent for a minute. And so it was a bit vague how all that worked. So last year's number, I think we budgeted to full occupancy and didn't really realize it.
Okay, perfect, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Housing, yep.
Housing.
One more to go. One more. And I think if we go to page 534, Marjorie. So if you look at what we budgeted for the housing proprietary fund for FY23, just in the housing admin and operating, we had budgeted $197,345. Our draft budget is basically the same. Don't ask me how we have $1 difference. I probably couldn't find it. but they're all pretty much held the same. I want to say, of course, our utilities and all that have gone up. we go to two pages in Margie and we'll see some of the facilities maintenance. For FY23, we had budgeted about $55,000 for maintenance. You can see the draft budget is $146,000 for maintenance. And I think some of that is, you'll see it's repair and maintenance services. We have, for example, the 8-plex and the 4-plex need painting. 8-plex has been, I don't think it's been paid in the 10 years. So it's time paint is dropping off that facility and sheets. So that is the basic difference in that cost. Wish I had more to tell you. Now, this is the fund that I've been talking to Clay about how to, with respect to our income, we currently have five vacant units. There are three vacant units at the 4-plex, and there are two vacant units in Lear Road. And right now, if you look across the org chart, I think we're looking at four director positions that could possibly come from outside, including the city manager, planning director, finance director, and police chief. The other one, we have interims that live here. So should they be hired for those jobs, they're already here. So if there's one thing we probably are, I know Debbie and I are wrestling with is there's been this forever, this housing list that's kind of never used because we use housing to attract kind of like traction and retention for employees out here. And there have been people on the list. Some of them, they already have housing and they keep it as a backup. And I don't know. I don't think we've ever really used that way. But there should be some sort of a transfer because we're holding five units, at least right now. So probably going on a year, frankly, they've been vacant, which is rents not coming in, which is affecting our income for that. And it's really a city function. We could rent all those units out tomorrow. So that's something I've walked into. I've been aware of that problem with the proprietary fund in that regard. And, you know, it's all city money, but when these are proprietary funds, we're probably not doing that fund justice by not making sure that the rents are being covered by ourselves. You know, we pay ourselves utilities, et cetera. You see that in all these funds, but we haven't been doing the housing fund the respect it deserves in terms of financial accountability, holding vacant units. And that should probably be a function of admin, because it's a recruiting cost. It's, if you want to look at it as a program, that's something we keep open for HR and attraction. But it doesn't look like that in any portfolio, right? And so I want to recognize that. And Clay and I have discussed how to probably go about doing that. We haven't come to a conclusion yet. Maybe Clay has, and I just don't understand it, but we're getting there. So Clay, do you want to say anything?
Yes, Bill, thank you. Wanted to let the council know that the current proposed budget includes a $300,000 operating subsidy from the general fund to the housing proprietary fund.
Housing, the dump and the airport have always cost the city a lot of money. Just the way it is. But I think we can do things better.
Councilman Luby.
Yeah, so on the housing, you know, so we pay ourselves utilities everywhere else. So who are we holding those five for? Is there a specific department they're being held for? Is it being held for the city manager? Is it being held for the planning director? You know, so could those departments pay for that rent? Just like you would pay for your utilities.
Well, it's almost like you'd have to do it in arrears, right? Because you don't know which unit's going to be filled by whom. I mean, as we advertise these, there could be a sleeper and we hire someone on the island. So I could say I'm holding it for a planning director, but what if that's indeed not the case and they've been paying monthly and in that regard? So I almost, you know, to me, it's an overall function. It's there for recruitment. That's how it's being used and retention. And that to me, if we were doing a recruitment and retention plan or program, just like the other like things we're starting, like going through and hiring a consultant for all making sure all the Title III job descriptions are correct. murky. That's a spaghetti mess. It probably really takes some full-time people that know what they're doing to do that. We've had HR people trying in the past, and it hasn't gone so well. That, although it's everyone's jobs, right, is through admin. And so I've thought about it a lot and talked with housing. I think we've looked at it both ways, but you really don't know until who's going to get hired for that job. City manager, sure, we know that that's open. We're recruiting for a city manager. We're looking for the police chief, the planning director, finance director. What am I missing one? Planning, finance, police. I got someone in public works currently. Got someone in fire currently. There's four. Police chief. Right. So currently I have four and there's five. So sometimes we use it as gap housing. For example, someone's moving and there's an issue and that's worked out well. We put the people in it for 2 or 3 months. That's been nice. They pay rent for that. It's not going to fill that hole of a 12-month lease that we're paying utilities on, right? Some of them not, but electric and heat we do keep the place warm. But you really aren't sure who's going to wind up, and all the rate structures are different. And some of them are, you know, two bedrooms at Lear are totally different than a two bedroom in Apex, and then again in at Loop. So you don't know how it's going to wind up, but it's a function of the city. And if I had to say it's part of a recruitment, if that's how we're going to run it, then it is an administrative HR recruitment tool. So we'll have to pay for it. And it's the city money, no matter what, right? So
That's what I was just going to say. Is there some way to, you know, to sublet it out until you need it? You know, maybe a month to month rental, you know, or a VRO, mm-hmm. but, you know, month to month wouldn't be, bad situation. At least you could recoup a little bit of that cost until you need it.
That's true. Once you start doing that, back when I used to early and be young, you paid your rent via check and all that. Now, just the amount of work it takes getting people enrolled, getting them signed up for the utility, you're looking at a lot of different departments that start doing extra duties to fill people, get their utilities transferred to them, et cetera, and that would come. To me, I don't want to make that as something we're juggling units with people all over the place and adding work just for the sake of holding units open. So when you look at the amount of effort it takes to run a housing program, and we're not really running it like we would if we were an apartment complex, right? Normally, people come here. We don't really look at who they've rented from before and ask what kind of people they are, what kind of renters they are. I mean, we don't do that. We do everything else with the cleaning, et cetera, that's in between. So remember, every time we switch someone out, there's several different functions involved. Even though the fund pays for it, it triggers who's billing the fund, how it works, and there's quite a few departments. It's not ABC rental company. So there's more in that bowl of spaghetti than it sounds.
Okay, thank you. Any more? Yep, from housing.
We haven't invented any new proprietary funds yet this year.
Next year. Okay, well, thanks, Bill. Any questions for Bill before we move on any of the stuff we presented or departments? Thank the departments for the review of their budgets. The item is now receive public comment. Does anyone present wish to speak? Anyone on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
I request a motion and a second to return to regular session.
Move to return to a regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Tungo. Hearing no objection, we're back at regular session, 9:38 p.m.
Next item is the council directives to the city manager. Are there any directives? What's that one we had?
Like, bring back a budget that's 5%.
Just that one. Yes, thanks.
Okay. If there are any directives, we need a motion and a second. Hearing none, and we'll move on. Having completed our items on the agenda, we are now adjourned at 9:29 p.m. Thank you very much. Good night.